Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council work session of July 11th, 2005. We have one item to discuss at our work session concerning junk cars. And Mr. LeDuc, would you lead us into that, please, sir?
Yes, sir. Bill Hagenstein has been doing an extensive research concerning junk cars. It was brought up at our retreat that we had that several of you council members were concerned about the number of vehicles that you felt were inoperative and that we wanted to possibly view making some possible changes. What I would hope by the end of this evening would be that you'd have enough information that you could make some decisions as to what direction you'd like us to proceed with a possible change ordinance if you want us to make any change whatsoever. I will say that this past week I climbed probably about 20 roofs on the north side of Aiken, and while I was up there on the roofs with the world changers, I had a chance to look around the backyards of several neighborhoods. There are a lot of junk cars back there that you don't see until you get up on the rooftops and you look around. I didn't think we had that big problem until I climbed the roof. So there is a problem out there, and Bill tonight is going to lead you through the discussion as to some possible changes.
Thank you, Roger. Can everybody see the screen up there? We can confirm what's that. Is it clear enough?
I think they can see it.
Okay. I think Roger's is on the money about what we're trying to look for tonight is that, as you probably already know, we have some measures that we use that involve the front cars and multiple vehicles and all that. But you may not realize that we really don't have a local code on this stuff. What we do at this point is reference back to the international code and the property maintenance standards that pertain to the international code. So we reference that. We don't have any local standards directly associated with it. So part of this will show you what we found in looking at that issue. First issue is always, what is a junk car? That's usually the big problem we run into is identifying what it is we're talking about. And it does depend on what jurisdiction you're looking at. We look at a number of them, and unless they're referencing some other code or state law, they are, you know, creating their own approach to how to define what for them is what they consider to be a junk car. The International Property Maintenance Code, what we use now, is a standard. And you can see, if you read that language, the reference to no inoperative or unlicensed motor vehicle shall be parked yet insured in the premises. Now, in the case of what we're talking about tonight, that only refers to residential property. Commercial properties, that's junkyard situations, and off premises, improvements like on a public right of way, that's those sort of things. Those are covered in other ways. Some ordinance include measures that public safety already has in place to deal with those. But in this case, we're looking at the issue of mostly residential properties, cars, and vehicles on those private properties. And this reference is to two criteria. One is it's not operable, or it's not licensed. In other words, you could, in theory, say, well, that vehicle's not licensed, so this is not legal. Now, if you find this, you go through this, you want to tell you that it's something that we're looking for. Primary definitions of local terms we've looked at reference disrepair is a good measure. Or the fact that it just can't move, that's the inoperable component. You know, if we find the vehicle, the guy gets in the vehicle, check it out for us, and he can't move it, that's pretty good definition of inoperable. And the vehicle is unregistered or unlicensed, as I mentioned, no place, no tags. That measure is available to us, but it isn't really a local code, and we have stayed away from that approach as a general rule, as a matter of policy, because our sense has always been that the council preferred in the past discussions we've had with councils, and the staff preferred is to try to take the approach of we deal with those inoperable vehicles and those without the tags in place, we'll try to take a more diplomatic stance to deal with it. And we may not push it to the limit of saying you're in violation going to throw it if you don't deal with that. You generally don't get to that level of situations with it. Property owner doesn't claim it is another way to find this. So some jurisdictions look at that. For example, you've got a car, a vehicle on a piece of property. It's owned by somebody. It's been sitting there for quite a while. You go to the door and the owner says, I don't own that vehicle. And we can determine that they don't, and that's correct, and they don't want it there. So there's no reason to tow it. Here are a few examples that we run across. I should say Steve Fox, our tonight may be a good source of answers to some of your questions. Steve has done a great job in tracking down the situations we've seen and responding to complaints. And I'll show you some examples. You know, thinking, see for yourself what you would think if you were looking at these situations, how you would feel about whether or not they comply with our intent as to what is a junk car. Would you consider that vehicle a violation? It has a tag on it. Let's assume it's a current plate. It's jacked up. It's under a sort of a shed roof, but it's not completely enclosed. Is that a violation? That's a rhetorical question for a moment. We'll come back. Here's a case of, you know, no plates, no tags. It appears to be down in the back, probably not operable. Probably a violation, right?
It would be if the sign referred to the truck.
Beware of the dog. And this, and here's another. This has got, I don't know whether this thing can move or not. It doesn't have tags, plate. Looks like it may be a flat tire and gone hard stuff. But, you know, it's one of those possible borderline situations. That doesn't look too much like a borderline. I mean, I think we all agree that's probably a junk car. And here's one that's obviously not as clear, because it looks like it probably is not in that bad shape if it could run. But if you notice, it doesn't have tags or enough plate. Is that a violation? Is that our intent for what a violation would be? Count other situations similar to that, no plate. But, you know, another time. Same thing. This is in pretty good shape. But it's, you know, it sits in somebody's private residence. It's not an enclosed structure. And it has no plates. And then I guess the question for you to sort of ponder here with this and think about is, do you feel that there is a problem? And Steve might be able to answer some of your questions about specific situations we're dealing with. There isn't a local coherent ordinance on the subject. We don't have one. As I said, we reference in the national code. We typically only treat inoperable or useless vehicles as violations, as we mentioned earlier. There is a long compliance period, and that does tend to slow enforcement. Ours is a week under our policy. We have 45 days to comply. That does tend to slow things down a little bit because we end up with about three different visits to the location by Steve. So that's a lot of trips out and back, a good bit of time involved. And we don't have any arrangement with towing companies in case we get into those situations to go on private property and address them on residential lots. And then enforcement is driven by complaints. That's not necessarily a problem unless you consider it to be a problem. That's typically what you see in most communities because it's hard to cover all that territory in one spectrum. You have a lot of issues out there unless it goes and systematically takes an area at a time. Otherwise, you're kind of responding to complaints as they come in. And as I said, one code enforcement officer to cover all of that. A couple of other things with a few ideas from other cities that we looked at. Anderson has, they did it in a systematic fashion. They inventoried all the vehicles they could find out there that they considered to be in violation under their code. They made an offer to property owners to haul those junk, what they consider junk vehicles away, and they paid the owner $25 to do it, to get them out of there. So that's an incentive approach to look at. And in their case, the city themselves sells to a junk vendor those vehicles. So what you're doing is getting the owner to allow you to remove that vehicle. Of course, you've got to go through all the title issues and all that, but Richard certainly would sort of like you on if you have some questions about those things. So the alternative in their case, if you don't go along with the sort of carrot they offer you, then it's the stick, which is that if you don't comply, they have a $1,000 fine and 30 days in jail, potentially, as the penalty. Other cities, Rock Hill, their local code, the junk car there means an obstacle without current tags or it's a nuisance or health hazard. So they do tend to take in that broader look at what is a junk car. They also have only a 10-day compliance notice. Ours is 45, and they're 10. They follow South Carolina code for disposition, which does have some language general in South Carolina code about disposition. Junk vehicle, I believe. Record service, in their case, agrees to. Obviously, I didn't do my spell check on it. To tow such vehicles, along with the contract for the city business, so they get an agreement. Regular service to tow it. No, not two vehicles. So they work that out as well. This is kind of an overall review of the cities we look at in South Carolina. As you can see, most of them have a local ordinance that they designed to fit their needs. And most of them include unlicensed or vehicles and mix as something they would find as a junk car or one violation along with an operable. So it could be either of the two criteria that could be met to cause them to be in violation. That star that you note at the bottom of Florence is that their tags that the property owner's given consent for the car to be on the property, that approach doesn't apply. So they're a little bit more obvious about that. In other words, they really are only dealing with that kind of situation if the property owner says, it's not mine, I want it off. They're not going in and saying, we're going to get it. We need to remove this and deal with the problem unless he says so. Then on towing arrangements, as you can see, a number of these other cities also have towing arrangements with local dealers or local towers to remove these vehicles. Because series is a very lucrative part of the business. Again, the other approach on that is having junk vendors that may be willing to take them. Possible options. Again, we'll just need to continue doing what we're doing. And we'd like to ask Steve more about that. He can tell you a little bit more about the details of what exactly it is we are doing. The other approach is to draft local ordinance that I mentioned, which seems to be fairly common. With the main issues being the ones we discussed, how do you find a junk car? What do you consider to be a junk vehicle or vehicle that is, should be considered a violation? Another approach might be that within that ordinance that we would draft, if you wish to draft an ordinance, is to reduce the number of compliance days down to maybe 30 to 45 now. Reducing the compliance days certainly helps us in terms of man hours and being able to wrap these things up quicker. And then the other thing about considering incentives, as we mentioned that Anderson does, sounds like an interesting approach. They and a few others have taken encouraged removal of vehicles without further enforcement. There's some other cities that also have gone into programs to donate vehicles to various organizations, nonprofits, to take them away from the fact that the owner is okay with that. So that's another incentive approach to dealing with it. That's basically it. So what we're really asking, as I said, is what we're trying to do is get your input as to how you feel would be the best way to approach this issue. As Roger mentioned, you really don't notice until you get out there and look in these yards and go around some of the neighborhoods, you contest that, but there is a good bit of it. I don't have the numbers on it, we don't have a complete inventory of it, so we certainly could do it if you ask us to do it.
Yeah. I had mentioned to Roger some months ago, during the winter probably, because I've always been concerned about cars sitting around and I never knew what was going to hatch and come out when it got warm. That's always been one of my fears. But I'm going to give you some reasons why you may have some cars that appear to be inoperable. That makes sense to me because these are some of the excuses I've heard when Steve's written notices and I've gotten a call. And I've heard these excuses, and some of them do make some sense to me. One is that they're not able to afford the insurance on the car. So the car has to sit. It's a perfectly good car, no insurance, and they can't drive it without insurance. Sometimes it's a matter of a senior citizen owning the car, and in some cases, a child might say, "Mama, you can't drive anymore. You know, we forbid you to drive anymore," and maybe they've taken the license or the whatever to prevent them from driving the car, and so it sits a little while. Another one is that the owner is hospitalized. And it's not able or may not be in town, may be in rehab or something similar to that, and the car sits there. And then if the car is part of the estate of a deceased of the deceased owner, sometimes it has to sit there until that can be resolved. Now, those sound to me like pretty good excuses. But I see what Roger may have seen when he was on the rooftops, because as I walk the neighborhood, I see these junk cars. And those are the cars that I was referring to, where it may have a blanket in a cinder block sitting on top of it. You know it's not going anywhere. It's rusted. It hasn't been anywhere. And I've seen children playing in the yard. And, you know, to me, that feels like it could turn into be a very disastrous situation. And I think we need to do something. I really do. I don't know exactly what, but I think that this is something we need to move on.
Well, the term nuisance is a term I probably have used much here in this presentation, but that is a term that does appear in a lot of the ordinances to refer to these kinds of situations, because you could have, as you say, health and safety or nuisance-related issue associated with some of the vehicles and the condition of talking. It's not just aesthetics, in other words.
All right. Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
Let me get her some of the things that Councilwoman Quirin has stated. But in addition to that, I don't want, while I support doing something, I don't want to penalize those folks that are trying. For example, one of the things that wasn't stated was folks that are losing their jobs. I'm talking to folks that are losing their jobs, that don't have the funds, and the car is sitting. Gas prices are escalating, and they're having to share rides with family members right now because they can't pay the cost of gas to go back and forth. So those are other reasons why people may let a perfectly good car just sit for a while because of they're restricting themselves to funds based on the escalating cost of trying to maintain their families right now. The 30 days, reverting with your recommendation with options to a 30-day, when you look at those cars who are sitting, the tires are flat, it's obvious they've been there for a while. And we want to get those cars out. But if a car is sitting in the yard without a tag, there is a reason. And I pass by a house every time I come go to work or come to council meeting. It's in a state where it's been sitting there, I know, for 2 years. on Barker's Road. And I'm certain that that lady that lived in the home is deceased. The estate obviously just cleared because last week someone was cleaning up the property. But when a piece of property is overgrown, you got that car sitting, certainly there needs to be something done. But a car that's sitting there, perfectly good car without a tag, there are reasons. It could be that son who is incarcerated, who's waiting for a trial or something, but just don't have the funds. And although these are, you may ask, why should you think of those individuals? There are reasons behind those good cars that are sitting there without a tag. And those are the ones that I'm sensitive to at this point.
I'd like to ask a question, a very basic question. Maybe Richard can help on this.
Yes,
Richard, what gives us the legal right to tell a person that they can't have more than one or two cars, and even if they're sitting there in their yard? What gives us the right to go into that property? I see this as somewhat of a personal rights kind of thing. I mean, they could have three or four swing sets maybe, or they can have anything you can think of in their yard. A bunch of washing machines. Are we going to write an ordinance about that? It could be a number of things. Now, if it's a health hazard or if it's an environmental hazard, something of that nature where you could rightly say someone could get hurt, someone could get killed, it could affect the neighbors, I can understand that. But I'm trying to get right down to the point of what gives us that right to go in if, as has been mentioned for various reasons already, a car is sitting there. A young person might be learning how to fix a car, so it's immobile. They're working on the engine, they take it out in the backyard. What is wrong with that, you know, as opposed to their rights to do that? I mean, I think a person has a right to do that, just like they have a right to work on other things in their yard.
Well, so. I think you make a very good point, and of course, in reply with him, the reprisal makes some good points, too. And that's why I was checking with Steve Fox. And, you know, certainly in an estate, the state is typically settled within an 8-month time. You have to wait for creditors to see if they may have a claim against the car. And it's certainly possible in cars that are parked with maybe a tag. And as you say, if you had a tag on it, you could just turn the key and go.
Mm-hmm.
That a notation can be made in that file that it's expected that that will close out in 8 months' time. So, you know, you can give discretion to your enforcement officer so that when you get these special cases, you know, you're not Maynard just going and taking that car away. Unfortunately, we are in kind of a different day. I can remember folks in my neighborhood in high school stuff, there was the project car. You know, there was the old Mustang, and it was a classic, and you were going to fix it up and then take it and get painted. But the problem you have is with these cars, you know, they're kind of a toxic waste site just waiting to dump. So if you get oil in the groundwater, if you get some of those other fluids out of the car, it does become a health hazard because that leaches into the groundwater system. So you can see the city approaching it from an environmental standpoint. There is such a thing as unsightliness and the hazards that Ms. Potter was just saying about, you know, I don't know what's going to hatch out of it in the spring. And I think it's one of those situations where, you know, some of those photographs you looked at tonight, I mean, all kidding aside, but you can just look at it and say, well, there's just no way anybody's going to drive that. And I think that's why you heard Bill kind of give that heritage stick approach. And I have to tell you from hearing before, our municipal court judge for 7 years now, that he really likes the idea of giving folks the opportunity to kind of self-help with that. So we saw the $25 incentive program, as we've done with the Demolition 200 program. This might be the $25 code program that would give folks an option. You know, if they're just not capable of paying the expense of getting the car up and decide, well, you know, it's worth $25 just to haul it off and then I don't have that headache anymore. And then you can draft the ordinance, I guess, in a way where it's not the big hand of city government reaching into the person's property just yanking out a select option. certainly have the authority from a public health and environmental standpoint, an unsightliness in the community standpoint, and that's wordsmith. But I think you really do as a council delegate discretionary powers. You've done with the public safety officers in enforcing tickets out of the road. You've got a code enforcement person in Steve Fox who can exercise his discretion, of course, with the guidance that you provide in the ordinance that's eventually drafted, where you can have an opportunity with a part of the voluntary giveaway. And then it's a last resort in some of these extreme circumstances, just getting it out of there through other means. You do have a role to play.
Okay, one of the other things that concerns me is that we have, you won't be offended. We have businesses that take these cars when they can no longer use the parts, and they park them in funny places, because as I ride through uninhabited areas, I see these junk cars, and they're not, I mean, they're all basically, the ones I've looked at are from the same person, and I think that I think it can become a problem if we don't get a handle on it. And when I mentioned it, I was very much concerned about where they were dumping them, and the fact that these were not in anybody's yards. They were just on somebody's vacant property. And I think we need to get a handle on, we need to do something about cleaning up those we can. As far as what the mayor mentioned about going into people's yards and tinkering with those right now, we have enough to do that we can do. Going into the individual yards to do the, as we talk about what's unsightly, and what's unsightly for some may not be to another. It depends on the eyes of the beholder. I know that at least once a quarter, I'm approached in a meeting regarding the west side of our town and the junkyard that's there, and I'm asked all the time, why doesn't the city buy that property, clean that property up? It is unsightly to people that are coming to Aiken. And as often as I hear this, and we contend with what's there, we've done some things to try to add some appearance as best we can to that property, but yet it still remains unsightly to a lot of folks, and the cars and trucks continue to come to be housed there, and but we contend with that piece of property. And I'm sure that when you look at health, I guess about 2 weeks ago, the question that I was asked was it not an EP or DHEC or an environmental concern for us to have that junkyard there with the length of time that some of those cars and trucks have been housed there. So our community, our citizens are talking, and they're concerned about what's already existing, and we're concerned about individual homes and within our communities, but yet here's what's termed to be unsightly to many that are coming into our cities and those that into our city and those that live here, and yet we pass it every day and look and say, oh, that's unsightly, and then we move on.
Ms. Price, I believe you're referring to a place in the county, though. Ms. Clavers.
Everybody knows that's in the county, and that's why I said that people are asking, why don't we purchase that?
And the issue we're talking about here, Ms. Clavers talking about some right here in the city limits. I believe, Bill, we talked about it one time, that it comes under zoning when it's commercial, right? We have a zoning.
Yeah, that's correct.
We have an ordinance for that.
We're working on that right now, Leslie. There's been work on it between the county and the state. That's what got the trees up there to start with,
right,
on the other side. and then the judge failed to rule on the other side at that time. So Richard and I have talked about it. I've got to file that thick since 96, and we're working on it right now. So maybe we can make a dent on the other side as well, plus getting those things moved off the right of way on the side where we do have the trees.
I just want to say that when I went to look at the Hampton Avenue properties that we're considering tonight, I think I saw two of these cars that you have pictures of. And what occurred to me is I don't really mind that they don't have a license plate. What makes them look so bad is when they don't have four tires that sit on the ground,
right,
and that they're not parking in either a driveway or what looks like a parking space. And it occurs to me that if that's what we would require, that it be parked in a parking space and have four tires, then we wouldn't have to worry about the possibility of a car falling on someone that was playing under it or something like that. They didn't have to be tires that broke. They could just be tires that held the car up, you know. And that it just occurred to me that they wouldn't look that bad if that was the case. And I understand all that business about insurance and stuff, and I think that's a very good point. Also, I wonder if they know that you can donate cars and get a nice tax break. Maybe we need to publicize that a little bit along with it. And also, I think we do need to take an initiative here, like Ms. Clyburn said, because we don't want to put neighbor against neighbor so that a neighbor has to complain about somebody that they're going to have to live next door to for the next however how long. So if we would take a leadership role here and simply ask for a reasonable appearance, that's what we're trying to get for our town and our neighborhoods. And if we buy that property on Hampton, for example, with two here on the other side, it would be a shame if in between we see junk cars lined up. It really will be. And I think we can do it without having any real undue financial hardship on someone. I think requiring a license plate might be a real financial hardship.
And certainly, that's why we come to you for the policy decision, because that may not be something that needs to be on the radar screen now. As we address the problem, then we revisit it.
I think what we want is we want a definition of junk car, which is reasonable.
Yeah.
A junk car, in my mind, is not one without a license.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it. So we need to.
And sitting on four wheels.
Yeah. I mean, you need to come up with a reasonable. I guess it's one of those things we all know what a junk car is when we see it, but we're not sure about, you know, that. So we need a reasonableness as far as what a junk car is and then how we operate it. So.
But we agreed we're going to go ahead with some sort of ordinance and some sort of towing thing.
Yeah.
And I think we've got enough input today to come out with something that's in the middle of the road. And
but I think what we're saying is
can then,
if you look at the Rock Hill one, it says junk car means either inoperable without current tags, or, you know, we may need to have, or in other words, the definition is such.
But when it comes to us, I think,
right,
as with the length of trucks, we will work it over.
Right. All right, you can count on that.
Let me
suggest this. I'm talking to Roger here. Between Bill and Roger and the comments that council has made, Roger feels he has enough to put together some kind of a rough draft for us to look at again, and maybe our next work session. Let's have another 30-minute work session before our next meeting or the meeting following, and look at it at that time. I think there's some very good thoughts that came out, and we've got to be kind of careful on this thing. So why don't we do that? Council agree to that?
Yes.
Okay. Good. We'll move right into our city council meeting. That was the only item we had on our work session this evening. case. Oh, yeah. Richard, would you sit up here with us? Okay, please.
Gary Smith is unavailable tonight. He's coaching one of the teams that's in the finals for baseball, so he was not able to join us tonight.
Okay. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Aiken City Council meeting of July 11th, 2005. And we're glad to see everyone here. And if you would please stand with us for our prayer and a pledge of allegiance. Most gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you that you blessed us again with the ability to come together as citizens of our city and council, as our government, to make decisions on our agenda this evening. We thank you for those who are here to participate with us. We thank you for our staff that puts together so much information for us to help city council make the decisions that we do. And we just thank you, Lord, for blessing our community like you have in the past and in the present. And our thoughts, of course, go out today, Lord, for those who were injured, killed over in London recently with the terrorists, and also with the recent hurricane, and those who left their homes for whatever reason, had to leave their homes, and perhaps injured or hope not killed, but put out, in other words, Lord, because of this storm. We pray for them, and we ask your blessings to be with them, too, as they return to their homes. And again, Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for this opportunity that we have to work together to improve our community day to day. In your name we pray. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda this evening?
Yes, sir. I had a couple of citizens from Edgefield Avenue call that wanted to speak to us at the end of the new business.
Okay.
Are they here?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay. We'll make that item six then.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay, anything else? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second. All in favor? Show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. First item, the minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the work session in the regular meeting of June 27th, 2005. Any corrections, changes, additions necessary there? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
Move for adoption, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Any comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Under old business, the first item is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone property off Hitchcock Parkway west of Fox Chase Subdivision. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. This is an ordinance amending the zoning of real estate owned by Aiken Preparatory School from Office Institutional O to Residential Single Family Stable RSS. You had the memo before you tonight that I gave you, plus many of you got the email, and I made a copy of a letter written by the board chair, Tara Bostwick, concerning this property. You had asked last meeting that it would be a maximum of 10 lots. In her letter, she states that there would be a maximum of 5 lots at this location. That means that each of those would have a minimum of 4 acres if you just took the 40 acres. But once you put the roads in there and it's some detention for that area, you really are talking probably a minimum of 5 acres or more in this location. So you're talking about fairly large lots. It's a minimum in there to meet this particular zoning of 3 acres. One of the things that is in the letter is basically asking that City Council would consider a 25-foot buffer, not the 50-foot buffer. As we discussed at the last meeting, if you want to align this roadway up with Reinhardt Way, you would need to at least curve the roadway before you obtain the 50-foot buffer. She felt, and the board feels, that 25 is adequate, especially the large-sized lots. I know Tara Bostwick's here tonight to answer any questions you have. If you pass this tonight, this is the second reading, and it is a public hearing to rezone property currently owned by Aiken Park Tour School along Hitchcock Parkway from office institutional to RSS.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading public hearing of the ordinance, so if anyone would like to speak, you certainly may do so. If you would, please come up to the microphone here and tell us your name and your address.
This is on the Hitchcock Parkway.
Yes, Terry, you can come too. And then, Neil, you can come next.
My name is Tara Bostwick. I reside at 525 North Street Southwest, and I'm here representing Aiken Park School as board chair. In my letter to most of you all, I requested, I gather in the first reading, there was some discussion and question about the removal of the 50-foot buffer to the 25-foot buffer. And for you might remember that the 50-foot buffer was originally put on there when that property was annexed in anticipation that a school was going to be built there. And that was to allow Fox Chase residents to have a larger than regular buffer, hopefully to keep the noise of screaming children and vehicles coming and going from that property. As it stands now, and we are asking for the rezoning to RSS, and I have assured the council members that the maximum amount of lots that will be on that property will only be 5. And I understand that typically in subdivisions it is only 25-foot buffer between subdivisions. Therefore, requesting that you consider putting 25-foot buffer. There was also, I gather, a question about if the road was going to go up parallel Hitchcock, and that was a need to increase the buffer so that Fox Chase residents would not have to hear the vehicles at such close range or even have the road close to their residences. The road will not be going up parallel to Fox Chase. It will go as if the DOT has actually given us that angle. That, in my understanding, is fixed. It's right across right now. There are two options for the road in that property. One is to make an immediate left and run parallel to Hitchcock Parkway, as close to the parkway as possible, or run an angle towards the other end of the property. But the foundation in our discussion with them is asked that the road does not go up and divide between the 20 acres that is going to be developed in the 20 acres that's not going to be developed. So there is no issue with the road being there to potentially increase the buffer, keep the buffer at 50 feet. So we're asking for the 25.
Any questions, Tara?
So you're going to develop the side that's nearest to Fox Chase?
If you were to look at that that 40-acre tract, you would divide it in half. I'm not sure if you have a map for me.
Yeah.
Okay, so divide that half basically parallel to the parkway. That square is going to be the acreage that is going to be sold.
In back of it?
The split.
Let me see.
The back portion would not.
The back portion that's closest to the parkway, correct? Right. You would run the lot, you would run basically the property line.
Oh, the part near the woods then would not be developed.
Correct.
Okay. But, therefore, someone that lives in Fox Chase would have a 25-foot barrier right behind their home, right?
Correct.
Okay. And how far do you think the road would go in if you're going to turn it left in parallel?
Probably as minimally as possible, because other than turning for it, obviously the people that I would assume are interested in purchasing this acreage is going to be an equestrian. So the only reason there would be a wider an easier term would be to be able to have a horse trailer go in.
That's right.
But you're not looking at a large distance or to determine and encroach on fox chase's privacy.
The way it has to be developed, if you get five lots, whatever, you have to go in far enough to where you divide it up equally, and so you have to go at least into the middle and come in with a small cul-de-sac. So it actually will bend when you first come in. That's set by DOT. You come in, bend to the left, probably get as close to the parkway with green space or whatever, and make a small cul-de-sac, and then have your five lots come off the middle of it. That's the logical way for it to be done, for it to be developed properly.
Right. Is that lots want to take advantage of being adjacent to the woods?
And each one of the lots would have a riding trail around it to be able to get to the woods anyway.
That's what I was going to say, because the ones that would be on the highway side wouldn't have direct access to
it. I mean, you're not talking a large area.
Okay.
If you're going to have four or five lots, they're all going to border the Hitchcock Foundation towards it.
Okay.
Roger, is on RS Stables zoning, is there a setback requirement required in RS zoning?
No.
All right, so what this would be something with RSS plus an additional 25-foot setback, right?
Anytime you have single-family residential, you do not have a setback. It's not required.
Okay.
I personally don't understand. I wasn't here to get in on the discussion last meeting. I was out of town. Why the setback shouldn't be 25 feet.
I think it would be a lot of decisions. I'll be honest with you, Mayor. It was 50 feet when it was first approved. And actually, there was no one here from the... And so we...
Your sister was here.
We really did not get into it too. Well, I think the biggest discussion we had was whether you could actually do it. And where the road had to go, you couldn't do 50 feet. But as far as the 25 feet... from a common sense standpoint, and about the size of these lots,
I think if we were looking at this for the first time, being residential, we would go 25 feet. I mean, I don't know why we would change. We do that quite often, all the time.
I think the only reason why it was is because the Planning Commission said 50 feet, because the 50 feet was on it originally. And then when you actually got into it in detail, you realize that because it's residential, I don't think there's the need for 50 feet. And actually, 25 feet is more of a compliance from the standpoint of if they're willing to get the 25 feet undisturbed, then why not use it? I guess that was the point, I guess.
The only reason 50 feet was on there was when we annexed Lincoln City and anticipating the building campus. That was
right.
The stipulation.
Right, I understand. I remember that. And, okay, any other questions? There may be someone else that wants to speak. I don't know. Yeah. Thank you. Is anyone else that would like to speak on this issue?
Good evening. My name is Neil Shaw. Everyone knows I'm here. 132 Hasty Road. I'm here, and there's a lot of Fox Chase residents here tonight as well, and I'm speaking tonight, and a lot of the people in the house tonight are also in support. I don't think that a lot of us had an issue with the residential subdivision there. The problem that we were having was we would like to keep it as a 50-foot buffer. One thing that everybody, like I actually boarded the trail myself, and there's quite a few residents in the house that boarded at Aiken Prep Land as well. And we're happy to hear that. If anything, they're building residential or want to. But we would prefer it to be not 25 feet, but 50 feet as it was in the ordinance originally. And one reason why is because, I mean, it's a peaceful and very quiet neighborhood, and we like it to stay that way. And to throw that 25 feet is an essential mark, and we would like to keep it at 50 feet. I just don't know if I can present it, but we just had a lot of people supporting the 50-foot buffer. If you would just like to present that, we had a lot of Fox Chase residents that were in full support that to keep it at 50 feet instead.
Would you rather have the residential there or the school with a 50 feet or residential with 25 feet? Given that choice, when Fox Chase borders each other, when you have Fox Chase residents boarding up with Fox Chase residents, is there a 50 foot setback on those?
I haven't measured it myself.
I mean, I guess what is a setback?
I know one thing that is critical is that they're big lots as well. Mm-hmm. And I would think that between each of our houses, they're at least 50 to 60 feet apart.
There's a difference between setbacks and buffer. I guess what I'm saying is I know the restrictions of Fox Chase when Mr. Penland first did it. I don't think that you have a 50-foot green space, which is what they said. In other words, I believe what we're saying is a 25-foot undisturbed. Isn't that what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking about
a setback. A 25-foot undisturbed buffer. And if you look at Fox Chase, between when Fox Chase borders up Fox Chase, like the houses across the street here, they don't even have that. In other words, there's a riding trail right to the property line. You see what I'm saying? So this particular, giving it 25 feet buffer, is even more restrictive than what you have in Fox Chase.
Sure, but one critical item is that riding trail back there, and I think that gets quite disturbed. I'm not sure. I mean, we all ordered that riding trail lots around.
But I think the riding trail is part of the lots, is it not true?
Part of the lots.
Yes. Yeah. They are part of the lots. So what we're saying is you will have 25 undisturbed acreage. You then will have, if I were developing this, they would have to have a riding trail on their lots, just like yours, on the back portion. So believe me, from a real estate side of this, this is even more restrictive. Am I stating this correctly, Ms. Bosworth?
Yes.
That there will be a 25 undisturbed buffer and then a riding trail behind those to get to the woods.
The trail won't be on the buffer.
Exactly.
Okay. Actually, may I address that issue? Does that help?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Neil.
Currently, there is, I spoke to Phil Wolheiser, who could not be here tonight, to discuss Phil Wolheiser, his property owner in Fox Chase, and his property adjacent to part of his property as we speak right now. He had been president of the property association at one point. My understanding from him, as it stands now, on those properties, there's actually a easement through the Fox Chase properties that allows a riding trail. So what you need to conceive is that you have a property, you then have the easement, the Fox Chase easement, which is the bridle path. Then you would be looking at the 25-foot buffer. That easement is there. That's your easement. That is your property. That was created by Fox Chase. So we're looking at 25 feet beyond that. What we're asking for, the reason why 50 feet was that when we annexed into the school, into the city, we were planning on building a school. And at Fox Chase residents' request, we put the 50. The other interesting thing that you might want to know, and I'm just trying to find my map, we're actually only looking at probably four properties. I'm trying on that, of Fox Chase residences that would be impacted by this subdivision.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Phil Wolheiser is one owner of. Thank you. I can't see it from here, but I see. Phil Wolheiser and some other property owners will have the luxury of being next to, adjacent to, the land to the foundation. So,
in other words, Mr. Shaw, Neil's property, the top portion, we've got the top portion.
He would not be affected at all. And for those that maybe are in that section, I don't know these map. I have now do not have permits, and they've all built only that they all approved. Again, you're talking about four or five. The glide path, as we're working on right now for those, again, have to remember we're talking four or five residences only, is going to be at the property line up the very top. It won't even be where you're looking right now. The glide path for entrance into the woods will be at the top of the property line into the foundation. I'd be happy to share with you that's where we're actually talking. I understand your concern, but I think if you're looking at four or five lots of land that is going to be bought by people who love and value the woods as much as we all do that are lucky to live next to it, I don't see that would be an issue that I'd be happy to share with you.
Let me also point out that in addition to that untouched buffer, that the houses that would be built in that area would have to also have a setback of at least 25 additional feet from that area. So it's the closest that a house could be would be 50 feet from that lot line.
50 feet from the bike path?
Well, it's 25 feet from the buffer.
You have an easement riding path, so it's got to be set back from the riding path as well, so they won't... It would be exactly what Fox Chase has, except that Fox Chase uses the back part of the property, which is a riding easement. They're going to have a riding easement on these, this is what I understand, and outside of that, another 25 feet green space untouched buffer.
They won't even know this development is there.
That's good.
Thank you. Thank you, Tara. Is there anyone else who would like to speak?
That's undisturbed. Basically, how is that managed really as undisturbed area? Is that the lots that back up to that, they have a riding trail on one side. Mm-hmm. You have a horse community that is then likely want to have access to that. Are they going to give the break that undisturbed area to access that riding trail, or are they going to have to move down in a parallel fashion to access the riding trail?
This, I'm going to speak to you as a real estate guy here. If this is undisturbed, they're riding, you've got your riding over here.
Right.
Theirs is going to be on this side, which then will give them access. These people wouldn't even have it because they've got automatic access if you do it like this. In other words, that is undisturbed, 25 feet next to your property. And then their riding easement, whatever that width is, what is yours?
They're going to have riding easement on the other side.
30, whatever. I don't know what the developer would do, but he'd have to put a same as your riding easement over here. But there'd be 25 feet undisturbed trees. They can't go into that, and then they would then get to Hitchcock Woods using it. Same way you get there, you go this way, he'd go that way.
And the other question I had is that the strip linked somehow to Hitchcock Woods, or is it just independent, or who kind of manages that easement?
The way it normally works is that you would put an easement on it, which would be owned same way yours is. You have an easement that gives all these people the right to get to Hitchcock Woods. In other words, they would own it, they have to maintain it, they pay taxes on it, and actually, the 15-foot buffer, 25-foot buffer would have to either be owned by this association or the individual owners in the deed restriction that it could not be touched.
How's that? Do you have any idea how it's in the structure?
I'm not the owner, but from a standpoint, if it's approved from the city, in the city, it has to be done that way, right, Roger?
Whatever you approve, again, right now it just says a 50-foot buffer untouched. If you want to make it 25 untouched, then it cannot be touched.
From a real estate
who looks after
that will be the requirement of it would have to be an untouched buffer that I'm planning to vote for. That's what, but how it's handled from say if it is touched, somebody has to come back to the city and say, excuse me, this is the way it was passed. So I don't see any reason why they would want to touch it.
But typically, the property line would go right up to your property line, and that would just become part of their property, and in their deed restriction, it would state that it would be an untouched buffer of 25 feet.
In addition to the parallel lining trail.
Yes, sir. Which would be exactly like your, yes, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. Yes, sir.
My name is Marty Shield, and I live at the Southern Forsyth Boundary. And in the absence of the chairman of the Hitchcock Foundation, I guess tonight I'm the president of the Hitchcock Foundation. And before you speak of the untouched buffer, the word management came up a minute ago. How would you manage it? Some of you are familiar with the woods, you burn them. And it creates a hazard if you have houses real close to where you burn. An effort to minimize the danger of fire getting into Fox Chase. Fox Chase residents up along the land that borders our property have a swath of 50 feet for almost 1 mile. We did with the grant from the Forestry Commission, and we cut a swath, get all the understory out, left the trees standing. But you should consider before the wording or any of this goes down that you're going to have an untouched buffer, that there are management considerations and fire considerations in that area. But also pine beetles, you get them in there and you have to fix up. You have to do salvage occasionally. So I just wanted to point that out. I'll be glad to answer any questions that any of you might have.
Harry, this would be the part that the woods would take over. You're speaking of, if I understand clearly, the woods, Hitchcock, will have part of this total 40 acres, half of it roughly.
That is still a negotiation.
Okay.
And we do want to have an access road at that point to access our property. And the reason for it is if we have any kind of fire break. Breaks out of the side of the woods, we would like to be able to get maintenance vehicles, fire vehicles, and things like that into the woods. But right now, we don't really have a good access point. We would like to have a good access point on that side of the woods.
Okay, so if I understand, I understand what you do now. Now, if you have this extra 20 acres plus,
yes,
you would want to come in there and do the same.
We have
a 50-foot buffer on that.
Well, it would be either.
Or
25, whatever.
20,
you know,
yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is that it's untouched. You're leaving a lot of understory in there that is highly flammable and could, you know, jump and cause problems over there on both sides of that buffer for the houses that we're potentially talking about.
Okay.
That ones already exist.
Yeah. I think, Harry, what we're trying not to have is a situation where a landowner is going to tear down all the trees and fence it with, and just go right up to the property. That's what we don't want. I certainly would not from a safety aspect or fire hazard or whatever that needs to happen in this 25 feet, that it would still be managed properly from a safety standpoint.
That's what I'm really concerned about.
Okay.
Is, you know, should it be managed properly to ensure the safety of people
who live
in that area, and also possibly
some
access going in there so that we can get
police
fire trucks into that area to manage
it. Harry, were you talking about access with Hitchcock Parkway?
Probably where the access point comes in like that.
Okay.
So that's what we're talking about. I don't think the DOT is going to let us put in another access point.
Well, could that not be worked out with the riding easement to Hitchcock? I mean, that seems to be a reasonable,
yes.
Whatever you put down in that, I don't know what is the setback, what is the riding easement in Fox Chase? Is it 25 feet? 30? So 30 feet of riding easement on the back of these, of the lots can be used for emergency vehicles, which I'm, it seems to me that's reasonable, and that would be something that they would want to have.
Well, we can negotiate. I'm not trying to
work out
the details of stuff like that. But for an issue, you need to remember that we do try to burn it. I mean, that's, all of you know, that's because it's partly the management of the health of the woods, but it's also the safety of the city.
What wording could we use so that we don't take the chance on somebody just clearing the property, you know what I'm saying? And that's why we're using this adjective untouched, because we've been burned before when we haven't used it. And we got a lot of empty buffers to look at right now.
Do not say an untouched buffer managed by the Hitchcock Foundation with the approval of both landowners on both sides? Okay. Well,
it would take days and weeks and months to do that.
I think, Beverly, the way to do it is, Roger, I hate to throw this at you, that it's put in, what we're trying to do is it's a safety issue. And so this is a 25-foot buffer, whether untouched is the right way. It's a 25-foot buffer that can be utilized, can be maintained from the standpoint of safety and damaged trees. Like Roger, just get the wording. I think we know what we want, but we don't want it clear-cut. We don't want it disturbed if we don't. But from a safety standpoint, we need to go ahead and to disturb at certain times for safety.
We need to be able to clear the understory out to ensure that it won't be causing fires on either side of it.
Well, how about untouched with the exception of the under what?
Story.
Understory.
I don't want to get too specific, and I really don't have the wording for you right now. I have to think about it.
One possibility would be to say that area would be undeveloped, an undeveloped buffer that would be subject to, you know, maintenance or management issues as certified by the city horticulturalist. You know, we've got a certified arborist on staff.
I'd rather say untouched except when maintenance is needed to avoid fire hazards or something like that.
Certainly, you can do that.
The word managed, I would prefer that you use the word managed, you know, for safety almost, more than untouched.
And Dr. Shuler, that would be true because there are certain standards in forestry management that, of course, do change from year to year.
But it would be something that, given the opportunity when this comes to fruition, not what you're doing tonight, what we try to do in cooperation with the prep school. It's something that we could get as an addendum, you know, management document that would state clearly what we should do.
Dr. Shuler, we'll put the wordsmiths on it, but in effect it's a rezoning, so it would be a condition of the rezoning.
Could we just say untouched and then trust that you and the prep school will work together to write this the way it needs to be written for the residents?
Well, the residents, you know, I would probably really, because I don't have any idea of, you know, I've heard from some residents of Fox Chase that they like what we did. Last year we ran a fire up to it too, and it worked quite well with the fire stop. And they did it well. Everybody was pleased.
Well, basically what you're talking about.
It's the first time we burned on that side of the woods in a long time, and the buffer, you know, was a very good thing.
Hey, basically what you're talking about too is your buffer then will be shifted to the south to encompass this, and you will cut your 25, and which is now the prep school property, you will then cut. So what we're really talking about here is that first half of the property on the right-hand side, which is what we're talking about. The rest of it will be owned and maintained by him, and then he will go up to the other residents of the, which he'll do what he's doing now.
We cut 50-foot swath all the way down to the prep school property. And then we stopped at that point because we did not have permission to proceed with it. So we would, in fact, Pat is correct. We would continue and create a buffer on that on our property. And then I don't know what would happen there. It is a consideration that you
For the sake of moving this along for passage and a second reading, would you support just the word buffer and then have a condition statement of mutual agreement with the foundation and the prep school?
I think that.
Okay.
We have a buffer that would be managed for,
right.
Managed for safety.
Right.
And sound forest or something like that.
But take the word untouched out now and use the word buffer.
I think it would probably, be interpreted as
right.
Thank you, Harry.
Okay, thank you very much, Harry. Does anyone else would like to speak?
I need to clarify something, if you don't mind. My question involved with Dr. Shealy's concern about the fire hazard. Do we have fire breaks between, and I'm only talking about the half of those acres that's going to be developed. The other half is will be managed by the foundation. My concern is to have a clean description of the zoning in this meeting or when you also choose. Typically, you don't have between subdivisions fire breaks, correct? What we're discussing right now is the danger of having untouched buffer between Fox Chase residents and residents of this 20-acre tract. We're talking residents to resident. We're not talking residents to woods. And therefore, I'm wondering why are we as concerned about the fire hazard in that section.
I think the only concern is, and I think where Harry's coming from, is the 25-foot undisturbed or whatever we're going to call it between Fox Chase and the lower 20 acres. I don't think this would entail the property that buffers up to Hitchcock Woods. I don't see there's any need to have another 25 feet to then, because the woods will take the fire break on the other side.
Correct. I just don't want to have the wording, as from a marketing point of view, on 20 acres, that there be describing that buffer. It's my understanding that if you have a house and you have a 25-foot buffer, you can't put your fence there. Is that correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. There is a buffer, a 25-foot buffer, and I guess what I'm looking at this too simply, but we're going the back end of a residence to a back end of a residence. Why are we so concerned that a fire will occur in that
between?
Space? We're only talking 25 feet buffer. Can we not just keep the wording, there shall be a 25-foot buffer between the
Washington
subdivision
and the
correct.
Mm-hmm. The only reason we aren't doing it is because of what's happened recently when we haven't said undisturbed. And we, you know.
I'm not familiar.
Over across from the prep school. You know, we thought all the drawings showed trees behind those buildings. Well, there aren't any. And we said there was to be a buffer, but we didn't say undisturbed. Or we didn't say, we just didn't think that would be a worry, frankly. And it's turned out in two instances to be more than that, because you've talked to me about situation.
Are we referring to higher density areas?
I think
yes,
if this is passed with a 25-foot buffer between the property and Fox Chase, not the prep school, not the property that will be on foundation, but the residential portion, and we put the wording in there that there's a safety from the stand pine deals and whatever, that what the concern is, if it's untouched, and the owner, because really the owner's going to have to say, we've got pine deal back there, he wants to go in there and get rid of them. We just need to put the wording in, but we're not saying, I don't believe we're saying put 25-foot buffer all the way around it. When you get to the, when you have the woods, this is only between the petrol property and Fox Chase. The top portion of it won't be needed because it's going to be Hitchcock Woods.
So typically when you put 25-foot buffer in somebody's home, who is responsible for maintaining
that? The owner of the property. The question is, what can they go in when you say buffer? The definition of buffer in my mind is that they don't go in and clear cut. It's exactly what we don't want to have happen.
So this ordinance that you're putting on tonight will refer to that. Even if that owner that owns there that says, okay, you have a buffer, you are not allowed to clear cut it, but it needs to mean,
maintain to the wording from the safety of what y'all arrive at the other.
The conditions.
And what happened on it, what James talked about, we had a buffer provision in the other subdivision. but uncut, undisturbed, was not put in it, and every tree was gone. And that's the reason why we're, I know it sounds like a big deal, but that's why we're having this discussion.
My question also
then
is, who will then decide what value that means?
It would be my opinion that the owner of it would be responsible. But that would be my opinion.
Are you planning to have this as an association to four lots with it?
I'm not planning on developing this on behalf of the school.
You're selling it. So you're independent without any association affiliation?
We're talking four or five residences. I think that they
in effect, we're really talking then about one property.
One property.
That is going to be affected by this property.
That would be affected by this property.
Or maybe two, depending on the how you draw it up.
Let me just, we've said a lot about this. And to me, it's something that our zoning official can work on if necessary. If it comes down to deciding what is necessary from a safety standpoint, we also have a horticulturist that can work with it. On item number three, which you have in the ordinance, it says right now there should be an untouched buffer of at least 50 feet. If council would like to change it, we could say there should be an untouched buffer of at least 25 feet in depth and managed for fire safety only along the boundary of Fox Chase Subdivision. That's going to allow that homeowner of this area, this 3-4 acre section, to keep as a green space, but if it's necessary, like Mr. Sheehan said, we need to come in there and cut some trees or do some underbrush clearing because of a fire hazard, they could discuss with the city and we'd go out there and allow them to do that. But it would be untouched and managed for fire safety only. I don't think we need to get Hitchcock Woods involved with this, I don't think. It can probably need to be involved. It's between the city and its property owner.
Yeah, and the property owner will have a standard to consult to know what is the proper practice in that area.
Thank you. Where in the ordinance does it say they're just going to be four?
Okay, then under, we've added number item four in the ordinance. And it would say, item number four would say maximum 5 lots in the front 20 acres along Hitchcock Parkway. So there, again, it's defined that there would be no more than 5 lots, be on the front 20 acres, and be along Hitchcock Parkway. Versus right now, it says 10 lots on the 40 acres.
Do we put up the turn lanes?
Roger, I don't want to get into the I think we should pass it and require the buffers, but I think the zoning, I guess where I'm coming from here, we've been asked to zone this and put the buffer around it. But getting anything that's wrong with five and get in the middle of the of this deeding to the school, from the school to the Hitchcock Foundation. I guess where I'm coming from is that I believe that the way some of this thing, these things are done is the fact that if it's zoned for something, it ought to be done that way. And then if the school and the prep school and the foundation want to have something donated and somebody's willing to buy it and donate it, it becomes another issue, I guess is where I'm coming from.
I'm just going by the letter that was sent in by Ms. Bowser concerning saying that there will only be 5 lots in front of acreage.
Where I'm coming from is that the zoning of it, I'll refer back to the fact that the zoning is 3 units per acre, and if they want to and put all the buffers in you want and everything else, but leave it at the from the request. Ms. Bosworth, do you have a comment on that?
Sorry. We're requesting a rezoning of local use. In my letter to you, Roger, and to Bobby and the email, I was saying that we are pressing the Association of the Foundation to donate half of that acres to back to them. And therefore leaving us with the possibility of 4 or 5 lots on the other half. However, I'm requesting that you do not put in the zoning, rezoning ordinance tonight that we're only going to be limited to 5 lots. Because what that does is it takes away the developability of the other 20 acres that someone's expressed interest in being able to donate. So if you cannot develop it, you can't donate it for a tax scheme.
Well, maybe that should be done then before we pass this, because if we only say it can be zoned RSS, there can be 3 lots per acre, is that what we're saying? Mm-hmm. And then if you sell it, I mean, you don't have control over it either anymore. You know what I'm saying.
Well, we have a document with the foundation right now that we don't have full control of that property anyway.
But I'm saying that if you would go ahead and do that before we pass this thing, finally, the county zoning is what? I've forgotten. It would allow development, right?
Well, this is zoned.
Property zoned in the city.
This is zoned for office.
All right,
office.
So there's already development allowed, right?
No.
Some kind of development's allowed.
Office.
Well, that's more expensive property than residential property. And if the owner wanted to donate 20 acres of that for a tax deduction, that would even be a better deal than us rezoning it RSS and it being developable and then they're donating the property.
Sure.
See what I mean? I'm just worried about zoning it RSS without any stipulation on how many lots.
Well, RSS would, with that property, would not allow you to have more than 10 lots, is my understanding. Because of the road infrastructure that we have, that's what I have been told. And that's why you were giving
that
request.
If you work out the 2 acres, 3 units per acre, with the buffer and with the road, they would be 3.5, 3.6 units per acre. That's when I worked it. So roughly 10 would be the most you would get in there anyway. It's because of the road. The road doesn't count, nor the if you left the buffer out. But I think what we're talking about here is, from the standpoint of what is better, is it better to zone the whole thing RSS and change it rather than leaving the northern portion of office institutional and let them, well, I'd rather make sure that it goes from office institution to residential RSS, which we can change it today and they can't do anything else, and leave the buffer situation on. You understand what I'm saying? The 25-foot buffer go all the way around it, but I think it's better for us to zone it as requested, and then if they happen to get it worked out, it still would be zoned RSS. It could be donated and then you put whatever, say it can't be developed. But if we do only the half and the back stays office institutional, it could get fouled up then, and then somebody could do something with it other than residential. So I think that would not be the right thing to do.
I guess the question that I ask, and I get a subtle feeling that the intent may be to eventually develop and place houses on the 20 acres. Is that not the intent?
No. The intent, on the other half, will let it go to the foundation. It will either go to the foundation directly from the principal because of the earlier arrangement the principal and foundation has on the 40 acres, or it will be a vehicle to an individual member tax donation.
You're giving the option, the donor the option.
Well, the foundation has to decide if they feel that they're comfortable with that donation. If not, they're going to get it anyway. There will not be development on that 20
okay.
That other half.
Okay.
But what I'm asking is that you maintain the RSS and don't say that there are only 5 lots on there, because that could lower the value of the gift.
It was between the 20 acres and the 40 acres, the 20 acres.
It was my understanding that it was meant just to model, it was the time to finish up.
Right.
If you were going to say, okay, we're going to RSS on 40 acres, have a 25-foot untouched managed buffer, and only 5 lots.
Correct.
And I'm asking, let's go to what was said the last meeting, 10 lots, for the very reason we just discussed. discussed. Even though
a maximum 10 lots and 20 acres.
40.
40 acres.
Which is what RSS, they're meeting the zoning request.
Yeah.
What we're talking about here is an appraisal issue and a donation issue. I think we need to focus on, is this RSS with 10 units, three acres, is that what the city would like this property to be zoned? I think we need to focus on that.
We've just been talking for 45 minutes about five lots, and now we're not talking about five lots? That's what I don't understand.
Right.
I'm looking at your letter.
Right.
On the
20 acres.
Yes.
And that's not
going to
change. But we're here at
rezoning for
40 acres.
But under the zoning ordinance, the minimum lot size in the RSS zone is 3 acres.
It says, although the whole 40 acres is being asked to be rezoned, on behalf of the property to be developed, the property will have a maximum 5 4-acre size.
Correct, but that's only on half of the acreage. That is not the full 40 acres.
I have one question that maybe I heard the answer and I just forgot it or whatever, but and this is important to me in deciding how to go with this. On the right, we're talking about 24-foot buffers.
Correct.
On the left, you have vacant property that belongs to Hitchcock Woods.
Correct.
On the back, you have property that belongs to Hitchcock Woods.
Correct.
Is this buffer going to be both on the right and the left?
And the original building buffer right now is only for our property on the last case.
And now let me tell you why I need to get a good answer to that question is, it appears to me from the discussion that there is no buffer between Fox Chase and this common property. When Fox Chase was developed, it was apparently developed without the 25-foot buffer, which may not have been in place at the time as an ordinance. And because it's in the county, there's no existing buffer between Neil Shaw's property and this common property.
Yes, right now there's a 15-foot buffer.
On this property, because that's where it was owned before.
Now, but the 50-foot buffer came from your initial annexation.
Correct.
There is nothing on the Fox Chase side. Am I correct about that?
Between the residents.
Between this property line and the Woodside and the Fox Chase development, there is no buffer between this part of the property and that development. Am I correct on that? There is no buffer.
In the county and in the city, there was no requirement of a buffer between the residential properties. So on the back of the property in Fox Chase, they do not have a requirement of a buffer.
Right.
And we do not have a requirement of any buffers.
What I'm saying is that with this property that we've annexed, the buffer is only on the right. The side that connects to Fox Chase. The property on the right is vacant property.
Property on the left.
On the left is vacant property. And I'm asking, is the buffer going to be both on the right and the left, or just on the right?
Just on the Fox Chase.
Just on the Fox Chase side. Well, this is all here.
But it's hidden.
But did this go on to this
one? No.
Okay. So you're saying you'll never need a buffer on the other side?
Well, the other side is his house on which property.
And I'm just going to say that one.
Correct.
So is your 25-foot going around?
No.
Left? Just on the Fox Chase side?
Correct.
If I may, I think we're really point forward. We really were talking, Jane, about 10 lots last time, and I think this letter, in a sense, got us off on a track that we didn't need to get off on, too, frankly. But it really comes back to, yes, 40 acres, RSS is going to be a maximum of 10 de facto. We don't even have to say it because there's not room for more than that in the ordinance. So we go ahead and do that. And the their details, and hopefully we'll work out the worst case scenario, which is actually a very good case scenario, I think, is we end up with 10 residential lots and 40 acres.
And the 25-foot, which we've already been through that, so.
And I hate to bring this up, but at the last meeting, we discussed the fact, is it necessary to have turn lanes from Hitchcock Parkway into this development if there's only going to be 5 to 10 lots? There are a number of other developments along Hitchcock Parkway that does not have turn lanes. Again, currently in the ordinance, it says the owner shall construct turn lanes into and out of the parkway from Hitchcock Parkway. And that's the same language that was placed there when there was proposed school, and hundreds of cars will be going in and out every day. Council needs to decide if you want to keep that in there or take it out.
I'd like to make a case that it stays in there. I think certainly there are other places along Hitchcock Parkway where we don't have turn lanes, but if we were doing it today, I think we would have put turn lanes in. And eventually, of course, we want to widen Hitchcock Parkway. We've talked about this, and I think it's the wise thing to do. Go ahead and put the turn lane in there. I think any new development nowadays along the parkway ought to have a turn lane. We're getting criticized to some degree for the traffic congestion at times on the parkway, and I think this would ease some of the congestion, even though it's 5, but we're talking maybe 10 trips per residence, maybe 50 trips per day or so. It seems significant, it seems, but what would we do if we had a bunch of other things like this down there? And one of them would have turn lanes. Pretty soon we could have more of a congestion. So I support the turn lane to help ease the congestion and for future, too. It will ease, when we do get the money to widen the parkway, then there will be less cost because we'll already have the turn lane here.
Is it possible to have this, if we have one owner who purchases this property and chooses to have 20 acres to himself, can there be a formula that sets a number? You know, if that property, if somebody sits on that property for a year or 2 years and does nothing with it, are they responsible from what the ruling is.
Mr. Crosby, I think the way to handle that would be if we vote on, if we vote as an RSS with 10 units, that's what we're voting on, and a term, and I happen to agree with you. If there's a change that comes back to us and says it's one owner and we change that and then have to come back here, that would be, because what the problem we have is whatever we say here can be done. And that's where that's the distinction. If it can be done, then we have to make sure it's done with RSS with a 25-foot buffer with the sink. That's the distinction.
But it's possible for an owner.
If they came back, but now the way you have to do that is you have to handle it from the standpoint of them putting deed restrictions or some sort. There's only one unit on there, and then it would be a completely different situation, but not with the zoning.
Let me ask you a question about turn lanes. When we require those, and well, they are the easement that already exists, that's where they have to be to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't really be on the property owner's property at all. Because the problem would be the expense of building them, is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
But not the fact that they would take up any property, because they won't. It's already in the easement.
I think where the question came, we got back to this 5 units again, and wasn't this, but I mean, we're doing, so I'd just like to call a question.
So let's see if there's anyone else that would like to speak. Anybody else? Okay, if not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Now, I'll make the motion that we approve this at RSS with 10 units allowed with a 25-foot buffer on the Fox Chase side and the turn lanes as submitted.
Second, Smith.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just wonder if the people from Fox Chase that came are satisfied with this.
Yes, sir, you may speak. I'd ask if anyone else wanted to speak. Now, I'm asking again if there's anyone else who wants to speak, because if not, this is the last gentleman, okay? The last person.
My religion is 58 acres. I understand that you're taking 50 feet, maybe 25. You're on the assumption from your small development for 4 or 5 homes. Now you're talking 10, and you've got a restriction to have. The restriction was put in there for a quality length, not at Fox Chase.
The setback, the 50 feet, and I don't, was done because it was going to be off the institution with the school. If they would have come in and asked for RSS originally, I don't believe we would have put it in, because it would have been just like another phase of Fox Chase.
Yeah, the point is, that's what would happen.
I don't know. All I'm saying is,
if
because of the zoning of it, it was a school. It was office. We wanted to protect the residential area from the office institute. Whatever was it? Office institutional, well, right? Office institute. We wanted to protect that from residential to office. Now it's all residential. If they had come in and done RSS originally, they would have. I would not have voted for a buffer because there's no buffer required in all of Fox Chase. That's a distinction. When they changed it from office institution, come to us. There was really, the reason why we're doing the buffer now is to give you extra insulation from the standpoint of saying, well, we think that to try to meet you halfway, so we will give you 25 feet of undisturbed, but it's certainly not required.
When that was annexed, I think everybody acted in good faith here, working with the community, with Fox Chase, thinking that there would be a school, lots of kids.
No,
50-foot buffer was a wise thing to do. That's not the case now. We've got minimum of homes going in there. Doesn't have to be anything.
Yeah.
25-foot buffer, I think, is very fair and adequate, personally. And I support it.
Well, it's easy to 5 feet.
Sir?
We had 30 feet on our road. Well, that's
what you
said,
30
feet,
too.
Well,
these would be large lots.
How about 20 feet?
No, not necessarily. That would do the whole thing like 10 acres. And 10 houses, that's not a large lot.
It's got to be a minimum of 3 acres. Minimum. 3 acres per house. Minimum. RSS is minimum 3 acres. You can go into Fox Chase right now and have less than 3 acres. I know some of the lots, 2.56.
You're telling me if they go...
They got to have 3. That's what the zoning calls for. Got to. That's what RSS is. Minimum. And you know, you're going to have the 25-foot buffer, and they're going to have a 25 or 30-foot riding trail behind that, too. Same thing. This from a residential real estate development, this does not hurt Fox Chase. It enhances Fox Chase rather than what's there now, an office institution. That's my opinion. Rather than, aren't you pleased to put residential there now rather than the school?
Do we have Roger's language about the untouched part?
Do you want me to read that one more time?
Yes, sir.
What I believe Mr. Cunning was saying when he made his motion was there should be an untouched buffer of at least 25 feet in depth and managed for fire safety only along the boundary with Fox Chase subdivision.
Okay.
And then we're adding item number 4, there would be a maximum of 10 lots.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Thank you very much, everyone who's here for this issue. Appreciate your comments.
He's making trouble.
Okay, moving on.
on to item two under old business. It's a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance regulating tours in the city of Mr. Duke, please.
Yes, I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending Aiken City Code, Chapter 46, Vehicles for Hire, to establish regulations for tours, tour operators, and related touring entities within the city of Aiken. This has been a longstanding working together progress between a group of citizens, primarily located in the First District, but in some of the surrounding historic areas of Aiken. We first started talking about large tour buses or motor coaches. It then started getting involved also with a lot of the dirt roads and what we should or should not have there. Then got involved into looking at some of the historic areas, the number of times a day, the times of the day, the number of times per month. And we feel that through a lot of discussion with lots of folks and lots of meetings that we have an ordinance now that we can bring to City Council and feel we can, it's a good compromise by everybody. Now, in saying all that, there are some issues that I do want to bring up just so it's in the records and the minutes, that this is not the end all. As we discussed in the last meeting, we still are concerned about walking tours. We still would like to have some additional language of the not-for-hire tours that would be maybe a non-profit and how those would be dealt with, and horse carriage tours. We received an email, I believe it was last Wednesday or Thursday, concerning motor coaches or what language should we use, Richard? And that needs to have some clarification. We feel that we could add that, and Richard will talk about that in just a moment. Otherwise, we think that we have in here a pretty good ordinance. But as council recognizes, and we've dealt with in the past, once we have a complicated ordinance like this, we may have to come back a few months from now. And certainly we hope to, within 6 months, come back in those other areas and add that to this ordinance. But all in all, we feel we have a good compromise here, and we're ready to present this to you as a second reading and public hearing consideration of an ordinance regulating tours in the city of Aiken.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone here that would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so.
I think, Mr. Mayor, before you hear from folks in the audience, that Mr. LaDuke was referring to section 4627, and it starts at the bottom of page 9, but the important part is up at the top of page 10 of the ordinance. In subsection B, actually, and the concern was about idling engines and that we not have large motor coaches all over town just sitting waiting on the folks that are going on the designated tour, or then if a tour business opens up, just sitting there idling. I think the intent was to have them, as we provided in subsection B for tour buses, that those motor coaches go to Union Street or Fairfield Street between Park and Richland Avenue as they wait on the tour group to return back to the bus, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. So they proposed just that last sentence there where it says the tour bus can be parked, we would just add, and motor coaches must be parked in those two areas.
Okay, tour bus can be parked.
And motor coaches, which is the great big Greyhound type bus, right, must be parked in that area.
Motor coaches must be. Okay, any other comments?
That was it, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. If there's someone.
Yes, sir.
Just real quick, I'm Barbara Gatsby, supervisor. On that same section, the highway except the Copelands, that actually would happen either at Copelands or Barn Patch, one or the other end.
Oh,
In other words, either.
Correct. We, depending on length of the tour and the time factor, if we are going to walk all the way across to my patch and move the aisle there, we'll not be able to aisle across.
Explain, Barbara, why you're there, the reason for idling.
Well, for several reasons. Mainly the comfort of the bus driver and the passengers, and needing to idle and maintain the heat or the air conditioning on the tram, and really keep that at a constant.
Right. Okay, thank you. Does anyone else would like to speak?
My name is David Silver. I was on 331 Kershaw Street, Southeast. I've been the designee on the NMR committee. It's had the pleasure working with you folks. And I agree with Roger. I think we have we got about 75% of the way there. Richard pointed out an issue. We go back and forth. And I think the big point is on some of these issues, which I will bring up. But the fact is, if we break past this tonight, because if we don't, we could have what we've all been trying to avoid, which is motor coaches driving all over town. So, in good faith that I see and heard the first meeting, we recognize that within 6 months or the last specific day, we could, end of January, middle of January, have hammered out these other points. Then I think we can be very comfortable that our town has at least addressed the ongoing issues of tourism and how they affect the flow of the quality of life that we all like here. The parking of buses, Richard, I think people need to know, and the council people need to know, one of the big issues is if we need to designate, as you have said, the motor coaches, we don't want them parking anywhere downtown and idling as long as they want, because those humans are pretty noxious and they're horrible. And we don't need them parking at by the post office or anywhere downtown, with the exception of these designated areas, Union Street, Fairfield. And we also like them not to idle for more than 15 minutes in those areas, but we recognize that they need to idle at the Newberry where they're going to pick up and drop off their pints. And it's probably reasonable, although because there's not a lot of people that live at near White Patch, but the people on Dupree may not like if the city bus is idling for too long. But that's a drop-off spot, so I can't see that really being a problem. But I think we need to look at not only the location of where these buses are going to park, how long they're going to be allowed to park there, and then the loopholes, which really do bother us. We checked into the city of Charleston, and they warned us that if we don't tackle the non-for-hire charitable groups, that they will find loopholes to come in and replace all the work that we've done to keep the city robust out of the dirt roads. As it stands now, they can do that. So if we don't come back to this by January and start dealing with the regulations for not-for-hire charitable, then everything we've done was probably only 50% of the impact we want. And then finally, the walking and carriage tours need to be looked into because, you know, the bottom line is there is a big impact on folks like this. If you allow unregulated walking tours in the horse district on Grace Avenue and Lee Avenue, you could have 30 people walking down there. That's worse than one bus, and it could scare horses and so on. And carriage stores done properly could be silver. It could be in keeping. But too many of them, and if you don't regulate, you can have, you know, horses that are not healthy, and that's also would be a big eyesore and not safe. So in closing, I commend where we're at. I hope you folks will pass this tonight, but with sort of the subject to recognition that we can finish this thing off by the end of January.
Great.
Yeah, I have one. 46-27A, why doesn't that apply to both vehicles for hire and not for hire? And
I mean, what's the problem just making that for both vehicles, both kinds of vehicles?
I'm sorry, 46?
Well, it's 46. If it's bottom of page 9, top of page 10. What was the reasoning in not including not for hire vehicles in that paragraph?
I don't know.
If what we're trying to do is keep these big motor buses off the dirt roads, then why don't we have that anymore?
Well, the motor coaches are prohibited from the dirt roads in the city by other provisions in the ordinance.
Other places. Because it says tour buses. It doesn't say for hire or not for hire.
I think what happened was there was a definition of what a tour bus is, and there are church buses or school buses that could pick up people and not follow the definition of a tour bus. They could drive around the dirt road. That's a concern. A paid tour vehicle looks about to me like a... We're not a tourist vehicle, but according to the regulations, we're not there yet.
Well, I think that, as you said, and I think we all agree, we need to move on this at this point. We've agreed that we'd address these other types of tours, no doubt about it. And we're all working for the same thing here, to keep that community nice, our neighborhoods nice. And we've gone a long way in taking even the city tour bus off of many of the neighborhood roads. And I commend your group, and I commend the city staff also, and those others who have worked on this to come to this point. It's been a good 2 years plus, I guess, since everybody started on this.
I agree. I'm glad this game got out of the record that we finished.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Yes. Bill?
I'm going to gate at 217 Fairfield Street, and I'm also president of the Schofield Community Association. I guess the last one you came up with, Robert pointed out on page 10, talking on Fairfield and Union Street between Park Avenue and Richmond, or stayed up to 3 hours. Why were those two streets chosen?
I believe that Pete Fromer came up with those as far as an area that he thought that would be safe to be on. Remember, Pete, we asked you to give us some locations for that. And that was an easy area that they could move into and say, we're talking, motor coaches come in now maybe 4 or 5 times a year. We just needed some place where they could move in and get to and be a safe location.
Are those the only 2 streets downtown that you think are appropriate for buses?
The unloading and loading, I believe, is going to be at Park and Newberry Street.
Right.
And then...
You're talking about the likelihood of those up to 3 hours.
Not idling. You're just parking.
Parking.
So the tour bus... will not stop. The tour buses will not move, so the tour buses can be parked for extended stays longer than 3 hours and so forth. They can't idle the engines there, they're just parked there.
Right. The idling is not allowed because the idling of engine is only while the passengers are getting on the larger bus or getting off the larger bus as they get on or get off on Newberry Street to go on the tour in the smaller bus.
But these two streets are the most appropriate streets to have buses parked for up to 3 hours into there. I'm just
I think there's no
why Union Street and Fairfield Street were chosen as the two streets in downtown that would be used for parking buses up to 3 hours.
Yeah.
Again, all I can say is public safety looked at the downtown area and decided those were 2 streets that during the daytime was the best place for them to be located.
Okay, Fairfield, you have to remember, we have a funeral home on Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
We have a gallery there on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
We also have St. Mary's across the street. Very busy during the day. A lot of concern about parking on
that street, both sides of that street. On Union, yes, it's not as developed as it could be, but there are some developments going in on that street. And I just wonder why those two streets.
Did you want to address that, Pete?
It came up with those streets because those are some of the wider streets. They don't have the wide parkways, and it's less congested versus many of your other streets in the closer to the Lawrence Street area. You know, they're smaller, they have parkways, parking problems, whereas down those two streets, it's just not as congested. Easy ability for the buses make turns and park
and
more space.
I think it's fair to note you can't just look at this. You look at how many times we're regulating and when they're going to be there and the time of days that they're going to be there, right, Roger? I mean, that's part of this, too.
And again, right now, we only get a few motor coaches in a year. If it's during the time when there was a schooling session, well, we would certainly have to take that into account and ask them to park probably on Union Street than on Fairfield Street. But we do need to find a place where they can park during the time that they're here.
And, of course, the norm has been we use them several weeks in advance when they're coming. So depending on the time of year and what functions are happening downtown, we can give them the best place to park.
Another option could be, Chief, too, is Marlboro Street between Park and Richmond.
Those are homes in there.
I think we'll have to do just a matter of everything else and see what they have out.
Correct. I think that's a great point that, you know, again, 6 months from now, we'll take a look at this. If we think that this is not working, we can look at the location.
That's all true.
No. This is where they have been parking the last 9 months in these areas. But again, we get just a handful of them come every year. And this ordinance is going to limit the number that would be able to come in.
No, but as far as the ordinance itself will limit the numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak? No? Would you like to speak? Okay.
My name is Deborah Bree. I'm at 201 Sonoma Place. And my question is the same as Mr. McGee's. Why are these two streets chosen? We already have a problem. I'm a member of Cumberland Eddy. And whenever they have functions downtown, they push it toward Fairfield and Union Street. And as it is now, the church owns a vacant lot that borders Union Street that is flat full of vendors and customers that get free parking. So these buses, where are they going to park? You talk about the parking or idling on Union Street. Where? Where is the parking area for them to idle?
You want to come up with that, Pete?
Deborah, has this been a problem? Have you noticed this being a problem? No, I mean actual problem with the tour bus coming in.
I have not noticed the tour bus until this evening. We're talking about being on a park yet. Right. My question is, as far as the property owners on that street, did anybody ask, do you mind if we park there? Are you just going to park there? What are you going to do? You have a homeowner on the corner. You have a church property that borders that. And in between that and the other side of the street, you have the railroad track. Where are they going to park?
Yeah.
And it's going to be at whose expense?
Yeah, well, that's not the only street. We're talking about two streets, but let's keep in mind too. These are public roads,
exactly.
So we all could go there and park.
Anybody. Right. About people filling up the vacant lot that belongs to the church.
They're
going to do that.
But the buses can't go on the church.
Right. I think he's thinking about on the side of the road and not on everybody's property.
Where the parking spaces are.
Okay, that's what I'm concerned about. That's what I want to know.
Right, that's why we
use it. Maybe I'm trying to figure out why these two particular streets. So like everything that's coming as far as a function or that used to be up toward Lawrence Street is being pushed back down toward Union Street and further on. So my question is why?
You mean like Aiken's making?
Aiken's
at Giles Park?
Yeah. A lot of stuff.
All these are great activities.
Well, I understand that.
I think for the community.
Exactly, but in fact, they were not pushed down that far.
Well, they were housed downtown, and then there were folks that were requesting that we look at expanding it into these areas. I just heard so many positive comments about how it's enhanced the community.
I'm not bumping that.
Okay.
Point is, when the activity push down further and further, they have to park somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the church properties are generally filled up. Homes that come through there, vendors, anybody that wants to park is filled all that area up.
There's nothing in the way the ordinance is currently drafted, though, that would allow these big buses to park on private property. So, I mean, if the church owns the property and the bus showed up, there would be time to call public safety. This is just the public street and then the right of way.
People getting on and off the bus.
Right. They're going to unload at the Washington Reed International. As a matter of fact, we've had two tours that came through Washington Reed International on Lawrence Street, and the bus sat there. On, you can imagine how big, Newberry Street. You can imagine a bus parked on Newberry and the space it takes up as they load and unload people. So just that space, it's just not convenient to have a bus just sitting there. When you look at the parking, number of parking spaces the downtown area requires. So, but they do unload and load on Newberry Street at the Washington Theater.
Keep an eye on it. We're going to address this again.
Thank you, Deborah. Does anyone else would like to speak on this issue? Going. Okay, now it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve this ordinance.
Yes, sir. Need your motion?
I second.
We have a second. Any discussion?
That would be the changes that Mr. Pierce has indicated.
Okay. Any further discussion by council?
Just one thing, Mr. Mayor. I'm a little sensitive about the funeral home on Fairfield. And I hope it'll be okay with public safety is if on days when he has viewings and funerals that he puts his little red markers up so no one parks in those spaces that he needs on the days that he needs it, that he is somewhat protected in that respect. Okay. Chief, in the back of St. Mary's, they have a parking place, and we may ask for permission to park off the street in that space as well.
They have
the
time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very good. Any other comments by council? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passage unanimous. Very good. Thank you, everyone that was here and spoke. Item 3 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 2803 Virginia Avenue. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken. Certain properties consisting of 0.24 acres of land owned by Albert E. O'Neill Sr. and located at 2803 Virginia Avenue in the zone of same residential single-family RS-10. This property would like to receive city services, and you receive this in first reading on the June 27th meeting. This is a second reading public hearing consideration. An ordinance to annex property at 2803 Virginia Avenue under the RS-10 zoning.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone who would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, would you approve?
Second, Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under new business, approval of the accommodation tax committee recommendations for the Gold Cup. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We've had several discussions with staff, and you all have heard about the Gold Cup that will be taking place primarily in the month of September and early October. They have come to the accommodation tax committee and have asked for funding so that marketing can be done not only in the state, but also in the region, nationally and internationally, concerning the Gold Cup. The best way we could describe the Gold Cup would be similar in nature and prominence to the Masters that takes place in Augusta. It's a major, major one-of-a-kind event for polo, world-class here in Aiken. They asked for $54,400. We had available $44,217.25, and the committee, after hearing it and wanting to keep some money in the contingency fund and looking at the request, approved $41,500, which would then leave about $8,000 in the contingency fund. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of the accommodation tax funding in the amount of $41,500 to help the Gold Cup in the marketing campaign.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
I'll second it. Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 2 is a resolution approving purchase of property at Governor Aiken Park.
Yes, sir. For decades, ever since Governor Aiken Park was built, they locate the homes within this area, which is extremely flat with no storm drainage underground whatsoever. Therefore, every time we had a major rain, the water had to seek a certain level before it would drain off or run off from the area. Consequently, several of the driveways, patios, and even some of the homes had a lot of water that would get into those areas. For the last couple of years, we've been meeting with the Homeowners Association and been seeking a way to resolve the drainage in that area. Larry Morrison's crews have gone ahead and developed a set of plans, and we then began seeking the necessary land for Mr. Upson to complete this work. We've gone through some long and hard negotiations. Nathaniel Dix has been working patiently with us and with him, and we finally were able to come to an agreement. We only needed like 4 lots, but he was not willing to sell these 4 lots, thinking that the work that we do there will possibly cause some devaluation of the property surrounding it. We don't think so. We have not seen that in other areas. And so he is only willing to sell us the 4 lots, and we bought an additional 7 lots. We certainly can take those lots in the future, build homes on them. We also are looking at a small recreational center with probably gazebo at some point in time. There's been a discussion we had with the homeowners out in that area. But tonight, what we'd like to do is come to you and to resolve a long-standing problem that we've had. We're very pleased that we've been able to get this negotiation. It comes in at a little under $12,000 per lot to purchase this. Again, about half the money will come from our storm drainage funds. The other half will come from our revitalization funds. We will, again, work with the Homeowners Association on this project and the park and the rest of the lots that will be used for building houses similar to what we have in the Ashton Oaks and Tour Hill area. So we would like to present to you tonight the purchase of 11 lots in Governor Aiken Park for Billy Upson for $132,000 to be used for stormwater retention, single-family homes, and there's a lot out there for a park.
Very good, sir. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I want to thank Roger and Nathaniel and the people in that area who have been working so hard on this.
Very patient.
This is really needed. If you've ever been out there after a hard rain, you know how tough it's been on them. And I'd like to move for approval of this purchase of this property. It's
been long awaited by the citizens there.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any more discussion?
Just one item. Mr. Morris, the plans are already completed. Once we get approval tonight, you'll be able to go out to the bids within the next 30 days?
Yes, sir. We already have the take-all meeting schedule, and since I have approval, we'll be able to get it.
We hope that we'd be able to get a successful contract on this still this summer and be in construction this fall. So for the homeowners out there in Governor Park, I know who are very anxious for this, I did want to let you know that we're just not going to buy the property when we're sitting there for a year or two. The money is already allocated in this year's budget, and with all haste, we'll get started, and possibly by the end of this year, early next year, we will have the project completed.
Okay, any other discussion?
Right, just one. Obviously, the tension is going to go in that corner where the six lots are, is that correct?
That is the intention right now. Now that we have 11 lots, we actually have a little flexibility, but right now the intention is to go over those six lots.
Right. Just a thought, there will be a fence around.
There will be a fence and a wooden fence all around it.
Okay.
And this will be pumped similar to several other areas in the Gateway subdivision.
Okay. Just a thought. I mean, make sure that if it's colored, the coated.
This will be a wooden fence. And isn't it got a chain link fence and the other ones inside the wooden fence, or is it just a wooden fence period of Gatewood?
Gatewood has a chain link inside the wood. All we found out is that
I was going to suggest black line.
And black line shrubbery around it.
Yes, sir.
The shrubbery inside, and eventually you wouldn't see anything.
I was going to suggest that because this wooden fence affects your sails and the lots around it. Now, in the wood, in the black, yeah?
With the wood?
With landscaping, whatever, and you build sail lots around it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? We've got a motion and a second. If not, show hands, please, all in favor. Pass this unanimously. Item 3, resolution approving purchase of lots at Edgewood.
Yes, sir. Mr. Dix was very busy this past week. I think we lit a little fire underneath him. I don't know what to do, but we appreciate all the hard work he's done for us. Our next area that we're working on after Tool Hill was Edgewood subdivision. The first step in doing that is to purchase lots and properties in that area, so we're doing Tool Hill. We're coming to you with the first piece of property to purchase. It's owned by the Palmers, and there are approximately four lots there for $48,000 for future single-family homes in the area. So with your approval, I would like to purchase this property from Mr. Palmer in the Edgewood neighborhood.
Okay. Do we have a motion? Second?
So moved, Mr. Chairman. Second, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Just a question, Roger. Will the funds for this are coming from a block grant? We already have it set aside in the budget. I know this is
starting in year 2006, we will have $250,000 each year coming from 1 cent sales tax. This money that we're spending for these lots, the property right before this, and the property that we'll be talking about in just a minute, are from our special holding funds, and the money that was left over from previous budgets that we had this renewal for buying property under the North Side Revitalization Plan.
This is the second year where we were going
from
Tool Hill, we were going to this area, but the funds have been taken from.
I'm still coming from my North Side Revitalization.
Okay. These are from reserve funds?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. We have about a $500,000 budget for the North Side since you're coming up. And then as we sell these lots with homes on it, like in Tool Hill and Ashen Oaks, it's a great situation. Most of these lots have been sold for around $10,000, so it revolves back in and we have money available in upcoming years to go ahead and purchase more to do more revitalization.
Okay, any other comments? We've got a motion and a second. All in favor? Joe Pans. Passes unanimously. Item 4 is a resolution approving purchase property at 711 and 719 Hampton Avenue.
Yes, sir. As I said, this was a busy week last week. As many of you probably know, there have been some long-standing apartments just to the west of the Pine Lawn Brown Cemetery. And those apartments used to be pink, they're now beige, they're in very poor condition, dilapidated. There's been a problem there for public safety for years. There's no landscaping whatsoever, there's an open ditch in front. They're now empty. And we have an opportunity, very similar to the opportunity we had when Camellia Trailer Park could be purchased. And to me, when an opportunity comes forward, we need to strike on it. We would like to ask council, again using money from our Northside Revitalization Funds, to go in there and to purchase this property. Our intent would be to tear down all those homes that are there. Because they're empty, we do not have to pay any relocation cost whatsoever, which is a tremendous savings and a large, difficult task if you had to do that. In turn, because it does back up to Pine Lawn Cemetery, this is an area that we had money in the rents and sales tax, $170,000, to put up fencing and to put roads in there and to beautify and landscape this area. Again, the intent would be now that we would own this property to take the sidewalk that currently ends at Lancaster Street and continue along Hampton Avenue in front of the cemetery and this property. Long term, there's a number of things that we could do with this property. One would be, and again, we could talk to the Neighborhood Association, talk to some of the other community development individuals, Reggie Bonner, Second Baptist Church, but to put senior citizen housing in that area. That was the idea there. I know that for the longest time we've been looking for a possible place for a health clinic. And I know that Schofield has looked at some areas, we looked at some along the lines, but this could also be a possibility. But whatever's put there, we feel that some component of housing would go back in there at some point in the future under a plan of landscaping to beautify, because this is a very focal point along Hampton Avenue. The price is $129,900 for the 10 apartments, 7 units that are currently out there, and we are coming to you tonight to purchase this property and to convert that into some housing and possibly some other use in the future.
Very good, sir. Thank you. Do we have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Let me just, before making the motion, say the timeliness of acquiring this property could not be better in light of all the things that are going on in the two hood area right now. And I just thank Nathaniel and Lisa and Roger and others for moving on this quickly. With that, I'd like to make a motion that we approve this this purchase of the property at hand. Second.
Okay. I second. Any other comments?
Mr. Mayor, I'm not with the property, and I support the revitalization of this community because of what we're doing to here. I'm a little concerned, first of all, about the price. Second of all, have we done our homework from the standpoint of zoning? How many lots can we get on here? What is the zoning? The density we're going to go in?
It's multifamily zoning, which if we wanted to go back in there and put some multifamily, we certainly could do that. As you recall, when we did the Old Acre Master Plan, basically the entire north side is all multifamily zoning. And we want to convert that to single family in many of those areas, but in this case, it's still multifamily.
Okay. Obviously, water and sewer, storm drainage.
Everything is there, all the infrastructure is already at that location.
As far as storm drainage, we'd
fill in that ditch.
Okay, and try to retain it on site of some sort for the design.
Well, right now, all the water from that site is currently just running off because it is such a hardened surface.
Yeah. My point is this, I'm just wondering if we've done our homework about what we're going to do with it.
I'll be very honest today, we cannot tell you exactly what we're going to put there. We just know that there is an opportunity to buy it. The other people that have talked to Mr. Dix, the person that owned it right now, was going to go ahead and just put a minimal amount into each of those units, a few thousand dollars, and we'd be winding up having concrete block apartments out there again, running at $200 to $250 per month. And due to some different situations we're going to get into tonight, they decided not to do that and to go ahead and sell it. So again, we don't know what we're going to do there, but we do know that whatever we do there is going to be a whole lot better than their use right now.
Yeah, zoning, we know that we could put multifamily as far as the density. I'm more concerned about what price we pay and make sure that it makes economic sense. And we still got an awful lot of work to do on Edgefield. I know that we paid for the land plan to get the Edgefield design probably with the sidewalk and the lights and the trees. And now we've got Morgan Street done, but I'm concerned about let's make sure we finish Edgefield Street so we can get those houses sold and before we jump on another project that we know is going to take some major money. Now this, as far as when I looked at it, and if the building's removed and it's designed properly and it can work, so I'm not overly concerned about it. I'm just concerned about have we done our homework from $129,900 that we now know we can do something with it. And if you've looked at that, I've only looked at it for a couple hours today and saying, can it work? I believe it can, but I just wanted to, usually I would spend a lot more time about what I was going to do with $9,000.
This is also similar to community trailer park. Are we going to get back all the money to community trailer park? No. What we paid for it, what we have put in infrastructure, it was similar to what we talked about Union Street and talking about there will be more festivals, there are more things that are happening. We're trying to create something around Union Street Park as an anchor. We feel that as long as these apartments are there, we're not going to be able to do anything with Hampton Avenue. Same thing with community trail park. As long as the trailers were there, we were not able to get anything done. Now that the trailers are removed, by the end of this year, we will maybe going in January, we will have sold every lot in Ashton Oaks. Everything that you see out there that's being built is sold already. Lisa's coming in with some additions. We already have sold, have loan approvals on 4 houses and 2 of them. We only have 2 houses going up, so we already have a couple other ones that are already sold. So we feel that the momentum is going in the right direction. This, again, is kind of the anchor on Hampton Avenue or the eyesore.
And we have the funds that are assigned to do the streetscape on Edgefield. We have land plan.
That is correct. The only thing that's left on Edgefield is possibly some a little more sidewalk for another block that we might be doing.
So another lighting and the streetscaping that we've done on Morgan?
Morgan Street is completed. It's got all the lights are up, the landscaping's up, the sidewalks and curb and gutter.
We're going to plan to do that same thing going down.
Eventually, we want to go on Morgan Street all the way from Hampton Avenue to Richland Avenue with sidewalks, and then the sidewalk would continue on the south side of Hampton Avenue from Morgan Street, and it continues all the way down almost to the bypass.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the 2-block area, which we're focused on.
And the 2-block, really, I believe, would essentially run on the infrastructure that's out there the last time I was out there. And they can address that. And I talked to him today about the possibility of adding a little more sidewalks so we can get to the park.
We are complete on Morgan with everything we're going to be doing there except for cleanup, obviously. We still have that to do. Edgefield, we are complete with the sidewalk all the way down to the park. We had not originally, in the design of the system, gone beyond Tool, because that's where the sidewalk is taken down into the park and connected to the park walking track. Roger asked me to look today at the possibility of taking the sidewalk on the
north side
of the Edgefield, one more block down to Heron. We have looked at that. That will be very difficult because of the slopes of the
driveways
there, so that's something we have to look at.
My question is, will Edgefield, the sidewalk and the lighting and the landscaping, and the, just like it's been done on Morgan, will that 2-block area, where we're building the houses, in other words, I got a Hayden Corporation got a house on the corner, will Edgefield be, is that in the works, or are we going to wait on that?
The lights are already in order. We're waiting on poles. They gave us an original 6-week delivery time. That's now in 12 weeks. We don't anticipate those for some time in mid-August.
Okay.
The lights are in order. We've already authorized Tom Rapp to install the variety down through along Edgefield. We do not have as much right of way there, so we don't have the area to plant trees and new grass and all that.
And Roger, this is not a, from the standpoint of construction, it's probably better to wait while we get those houses basically built. So, I mean, it's not a bad, I just want to make sure that before we jump on another project, that we have the funds set aside to do the
project set aside.
Right.
The only thing that remains on Edgefield Street is to close the driveway to the school district. And we're right now finishing up the driveway at the end of Tour Street that'll go into the school district.
Okay.
And then we'll close that driveway, continue the sidewalk,
and then the streetscape will be completed the same way as Morgan.
Okay.
And we have the funds for that.
Yes.
We got an excellent data on the paving of the driveway into the school. Our bid was less than $10,000 we have paid. And our contractor currently working there is working on getting the curb and gutter in and the drainage. So, not very well.
Okay, thank you, Larry. Any other comments?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to say something about the property on Hampton Avenue. For a lot of years, we know how much traffic goes up Hampton Avenue through town. It's a very high visibility area. And even people in the neighborhood were wondering how they could acquire this property and do something different with it to improve and to enhance all the work that's being done in the Two Hills area. I think this is a vital component in making sure that the outward appearance of the neighborhood reflects what's going on the internal part of the neighborhood, because this really is a blighted area and something needs to be done. We talked in terms of perhaps putting attached housing for senior citizens around the left, back, and right perimeter of the property and putting a wellness center in there to help with the neighbors, to give them a place to go where they could get work off a few pounds or whatever. And I think there's so many possibilities for this property that we should move forward in purchasing this. There's just so much you could do with it.
Mr. Mayor,
it's so different from where it is now.
In addition to that, as you look at what is going on with the improvements in the Two Hill area, the owner only has to look at what's going on, invest a little bit of money in the current property, and when you look at trying to purchase it later, it's estimated probably doubling in price based on what we got going on. So to get ahead of the curve, it's in the best interest to go ahead and acquire this property.
Well, I certainly agree. Roger and I looked at it. I looked at it with him, and I think this is a key component of that whole area. And I think it's a good buy. We've got a motion and a second. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Pass this unanimously.
I'll address Mr. Hall's comments later at the very end of the meeting in terms of his concerns.
Item 5, let's take it. It's the first reading of an ordinance to annex property on Whiskey Road.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this ordinance by title only. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken certain properties consisting of 0.43 acres of land, more or less, owned by Four Star Incorporated into zone the same general business. This came before you last year, I believe it was last year in August. You had asked the potential owner that you want to have able to access the property because of safety conditions on Whiskey Road getting in and out of this location. The proposed use is for checkers, and the property owner has been able to successfully negotiate an entrance that will be coming off the frontage road that runs along Golden Corral. And you have a map showing it. Therefore, there's going to be a right-hand turn in and right-hand turn out onto Whiskey Road into the development itself. We feel, based on what you had discussed last year, this does meet with the conditions that you asked for. And so before you tonight is ordinance to annex the property at 223 Whiskey Road and the proposed general business GB and find your consideration of second reading public hearing will be held in the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Is there anyone here to talk?
Is the developer here, the owner here? Would you like to tell us a little bit about what your plans are?
It's a lady business. It's a lady business.
A year ago, I was able to get this property under contract. I've been trying to find a location taken to put a check in the restaurant. We have several guests in the North Augusta, a little over a year and a half ago. And I was able to get under contract a 0.43 acre of property on Whiskey Way, which I brought in front of you about a year ago. And I believe, Kevin and I, you should be going out and look at the property. And if you weren't really comfortable having that exit back onto Whiskey Way,
That's right.
And for me to go back and try to negotiate something with the landowner either behind me or on either side. Well, a lot easier said than done. So I have been working really diligently and was able, after several negotiations and additional funds to put up, to work with the landowner to south of it as a property to get under a long-term lease to use it just for only an exit, to exit outside of the property. So it gives us more space that we'll use to beautify without doing some landscaping there and nice and long. We won't need to bring them except exit to be able to get out into the side front of the road just so that people can exit, go around and come out by the light or
other way. And it shows an arrow coming in.
You can use it to get in too.
Okay.
The entrance or
exit
off of the street, as you can see,
is off of
the
street. Well, how long
term
these two
were there? 30 years. Which is a typical long time. I don't have leads to hold
We couldn't just buy an annexation for that. There was not an easement.
Me either.
No. They weren't willing just to give an easement, which would be permanent, and then they'd be connected with the property. That's a deep concern I have. This issue really is if we are authorizing the development of that property, and it was contingent really on gaining access to the public mall. You've gained it, but you've gained it for 30 years, and the traffic keeps growing, and we've still got a risky road problem. So an easement would have been, I thought, a better subway. I don't know why they didn't give it, frankly. That's not a developer.
Just ask a question. From the standpoint, this is a legal question, from the standpoint of a 30-year ingress and egress, from a safety issue, because I happen to believe that if we hadn't brought that up, you couldn't have sold hamburgers or checkers during certain hours of day. People couldn't, they could get in there, but they couldn't get out. But from an easement standpoint, 30 years, and it's a safety issue, can we, from the standpoint, if it's a safety issue for the public, can we, after 30 years, say that that easement has to stay there?
Can we
require, after 30, that from a safety issue, that we require the city council that easement has to stay there from a safety issue?
As a condition of the annexation?
Well, I guess what I'm saying, it seems to me if the Supreme Court says we can take land and take property from an individual and build a condo on it, and he don't want to sell his land, we ought to be able to tell this guy he's got to use an easement for safety purposes.
I think you can make it a condition of the annexation, yes.
That's the easement,
yes.
And that's what you're asking. In other words, we're going to put a condition that easement is be part of the annexation requirement.
Right.
So
you can do that.
What is that?
What'd you say? What's the word? What are we making a condition? What are we saying? Would you just add it as an item 3 then, Mr. Bain? Yeah. And say what? The planning commission had 2 conditions. You could just add a 3rd condition that the annexation is approved, conditioned upon the 30-year lease easement running with the land. It's not just into the 30 years.
This is Vic's concern.
Right.
The 30 years, this, the owner on the other side says, no, I don't want that easement to come through there, and it creates a safety issue for our citizens.
Right.
True. Yeah.
My question to you is, as a city, as a governing authority, can we say we want that easement to stay there?
Yes, permanently.
I want it to be a permanent
easement, not a 30 year. You can make that a condition of the annexation.
Yes. The problem is, he can't get a permanent easement from, he can only get a 30-year easement. My question to you is, after 30 years, if we, as a governing body, say that, would we have the authority to go to the other property and say, hey, that easement's got to stay there because of safety issues for the good of the community?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we can say whatever we want to say, right? But then, the onus is on Andy. He's got to go back and get it, right?
Or else there's no annexation.
Or he could petition council at that time to proceed with eminent domain to make
it. Right, okay.
What I'm saying is,
if you can't get it a permanent easement, you can come back to council then. Towards the end, don't come at 30 years and 2 days. Come at like 29 years and 6 months.
But we don't mean to hold him up right now.
No. You're going to be here.
I think, though, that if we don't fix Whiskey Road in 30 years, we can all save it.
I think it's a
important point. I don't think we're going to be around to see it.
But I'm still confounded to the 30-year lease. Why wouldn't they sell the easement to the business?
Because I don't want to say what the business is, but I'm sure you're paying for that easement, right? And they ran the numbers, and he probably said, well, I'll pay you this, and that was negotiated back and forth. I was only concerned that after 30 years, it's a safety issue, that we would have the ability to do what we just said, and I think we did.
You do have that.
Yeah, and it's not just safety issue too. It's guaranteeing that commercial property is going to have adequate access and be usable in a productive way, is it not?
I think that the government, the city's concern though, Ms. Walters, would be that access issues and traffic for it. That's the public concern.
The only concern I have, and I know it's yours too, is that left turn, you know, right next to Aiken Bowl, and that. Can you get some signs to show the back way in?
you can get in there as far as getting out, but it would have been impossible to make a left turn without this.
It's going to be difficult at times coming north to turn left in there. I mean, there'll be a way. It'll be somewhat difficult at times.
The other thing that council has to consider is that over the next 30 years, the property behind you is vacant. Some of it, the bowling alley will probably not be here 30 years from now, and therefore another access going out to Doherty Road from this location. We are always looking for either access between properties. So at those times that rest of the area gets developed, we'll be looking for other additional access points.
If we can't,
we can get it. Okay, do we have a...
This is better than I expected.
But may I move that we approve what I submitted with the easement, with the access to the easement?
Second, sir.
All right, then let me just hear that wording you said again.
Approve ads submitted with the 30-year easement for ingress and egress off of the Publix.
But the design of the entrance exit onto Whiskey, I see one there, that really needs to be absolutely in a way that it precludes a left-hand turn. It really has to have enough of an arc to it.
Absolutely, it does.
So, because I know
that it's a rough drive on the
field. Right, and also this can be run by our traffic.
It can be signed on right-turn only.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And as we all know, there are always going to be somebody that's going to take a left turn at night, so the traffic's not heavy.
The design is good.
Just don't,
really have to go back.
Just don't get caught, Greg, doing that.
Never do.
Okay. Any other comments? We've got a motion and a second. If not, show hands, please, all in favor. Okay. Okay, passage unanimously. Thank you, Andy. We have an item we added, comments from some citizens, or a citizen from Edgewood. Yes, sir?
Edgefield Avenue.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Good evening, everybody. Once again, this is a golden opportunity for us to interact with our city and community. We still have some concerns pertaining to the completion totally of the Edgefield Avenue project in Toonville community. My name is Ed Paul, and I'm a member of the Toonville community. And I have briefly spoken to some of the county council people regarding this matter, and some of them have actually been out to the Toon Hill community to actually observe and take a look at what we had requested on June 13th when we first met with you guys. We would just like to get some input from some of the council people that has actually been out there to take a look at what we had brought to you all's attention back on June the 13th of 2005.
Ed, you telephoned me on last evening,
yes,
and I assured you that I would get back with you at 5:30 this afternoon.
Exactly.
I made a call to you exactly 5:30 this afternoon to share with you what my conversation with Mr. LeBeau regarding the sidewalk concern and regarding the driveway concern. As well as Ms. Report, Ms. Colleen, Ms. Colleen, get your report. And I think Roger made some comment earlier in terms of addressing the sidewalk, in terms of our extending the sidewalk. You said Parent Street, but the interest was to extend it all the way up to the corner that aligns with the park on the north side of the street. Not the curving, because you and I had talked about the curving not being done.
We talked about the possibility of extending it from Toon to Parent.
Mm-hmm.
The sidewalk.
We're talking beyond Parent. We're talking about...
I know, you wanted to go all the way to church.
Yes.
But it's 1006 Edgefield Avenue, 1016 and 1020.
Yeah, there are four homes on that next block.
Again, we're not talking about assessing the type of runway driveways. We're just talking about the right-of-way, the entrances.
You're not talking about curbs and gutted, or the sidewalk. You're talking about trying to repair the street and put the driveways in.
The curbs would be super along with the driveway entrances. We're not talking about running sidewalks, you know, anywhere that, you know, you wouldn't have to remove some trees. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the driveway entrances, which is, you know, not much. And I noticed on Hayden Avenue, along with some of the other community members, they got some Cessna-type runways. I mean, they got some long, you could take a F-16 and almost get it airborne on some of the driveways. They have, and we're not asking for that.
I guess the question is this.
Yes, sir.
We want, the priority is to get the street and the driveways paved, not necessarily run the sidewalk all the way to Church Street.
Exactly.
Is that what we're talking about?
Well, not the driveway, only the right-of-way. I told him that we could not go on private property and pave anybody's driveway.
Driveway entrances, the same thing.
But there's only about 6 feet between the fence line and the street.
Right.
One of them is concrete driveway, a couple of asphalt, and only one house had a broke-up driveway.
Well, actually, take a closer observation.
I've walked it, driven it a dozen times.
Okay. We see this, and speaking of eyesores, I mean, you know, that's just like, for instance, you buy a used car. The motor might be good, but the exterior looks like a clunker. And that's pretty much the situation we got on Edgefield Avenue. You got part of it, the entrance, if you come in off of Morgan Street, pretty much halfway up Edgefield, it looked pretty good, but you get further up, you're like, good God, what's going on with the rest of the avenue?
Well, and again, what I mentioned the last time, the council, we'll do whatever the council wants, but it's, if you take Edgefield Avenue and do Edgefield Avenue, then what about McCormick, and what about Dillon, and what about Toole, and Perrin, and Ligon, and all all the other areas that have just the same type of driver situation and street situation, and that they'd like to have sidewalks and street lines and everything else.
No, I don't think
that's addressing that issue. That's just like you guys expressed on Clinton Avenue is an eyesore in that certain area. Those people are non-existent. Whoever lived there, they're no longer there. We are blessedly existing at these residents we're speaking of. And that's what we're concerned with. We're not trying to solve the whole world problem. That's not our job. We're being blessed stewards of where God blessed us to reside and live and be blessed stewards of. That's what we're concerned with.
Let me get back to the question I had. Are we talking about repairing the driveways on the city right-of-way and repairing the road? Is that what
that, that is what I said that we would commit to with those homes. With,
no, we're not talking about,
not talking about
the sidewalk already. We're talking about repairing. Well, I mean right now. I mean,
why not? It's only two blocks. Well, we're sitting here. We're saying we have Northside Development Funds. We have $500,000. We haven't spent anywhere near $500,000. This whole street is, it looks like, I went over there, it looks like it just stops all this.
Jane Rogers,
a lovely park over there.
Right.
And I would like, I can't imagine that two blocks of sidewalk on city right-of-way and a small driveway entrance can run that much money. Why can't we do that? We can build a lot through Hidden Haven, I mean a road through Hidden Haven.
And we
can do all that stuff. Why can't we build two blocks of sidewalk?
If you should have the money for revitalization,
Jane, the discussion with Roger today.
Well, no, I wasn't party to it. So I'm just like Mr. Hall. I didn't have...
Well, Mr. Hall received a response from him this afternoon. And the response...
Exactly the response that you and I had briefly discussed on the phone. You know, we get here tonight, we hear something... pretty much not totally what we discussed.
Well,
all of us on one accord.
I'm sorry that there was a misunderstanding because I communicated, I thought to Roger that we wanted to carry that all the way up. There's obviously a misunderstanding. I didn't. I said to him, we talked about budget, you wanted curbing, and there was a misunderstanding with your wanting to go on people's property and have driveways. But let me finish, please, Mr. Hall. I expect you to apologize to you. What I said to him and what I said to you over the phone is that we're talking about property right of way. We would not go on anyone's property and pay their driveway. We would look at the sidewalk all the way up where you live.
In the curb.
No. We talked about the curb, but what was that comment to you about the curb? Mr. Hall, I said to you that we could not do the curbing all the way up. You don't remember that discussion?
We discussed it a lot. Like I said, you know...
Mr. Hall, you don't remember that discussion?
Like I said, we discussed a lot, and what I remember us discussing when I get here, you know, it's almost like something totally different from what we discussed. That's why, you know, we wanted to come to council and dialogue again to get the input on the council people that have actually came out to the community to see what we brought.
As a council member, I could not make a commitment to you. I spoke with the city manager. He gave me his input. I'm happy to see you here this afternoon, and I thought that you and I had talked. I have also talked with the president of the association about this and had some discussion as well.
Well, now, there is curb and gutter in the part that we've already done on Edgefield. Is that correct, Roger, on that side? I don't remember that. I remember the side.
Curb and gutter, when we set out and developed this plan, which I believe everybody had a chance to see, we talked about putting curb and gutter in the first two blocks of Edgefield from Morgan Street up to Thule.
Uh-huh.
And then we were going to go ahead and do all of Morgan Street.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to put on the south side sidewalk all over the park. There's never any intention of putting sidewalks or curb and gutter on any of the other streets. If there was, Betty Myers here, who is the president of the Eagle Association, has begged us for a long time, how about coming down McCormick Street? How about some of the other streets of Abbeville and Perrin and Lincoln? We just don't have the money to do that because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars to put curb and gutter and sidewalk on every street within the community.
I have to tell you that I saw the plans and I didn't pick up on that, but I think now that I have looked at it, it looks like it just drops off there. And the park is such an asset to that neighborhood that I would like to see a way that we can make it look like that block. Eventually we'll try to do the others. These people aren't asking that we do a whole neighborhood, and I haven't heard other neighbors asking that. But just a minute, let me, I just don't see, now that I've looked at it, to me, visually, it would be so much more attractive, not only for those blocks, but for the whole sweep of Edgefield Avenue, if that were consistent along that north side of the road. And I can't imagine that if we are staying on city right-of-way, not having to buy anybody's property, that could cost that much, and that we couldn't find it. We just said we saved money on the entrance to the school district thing. I mean, why can't we see how much this is going to cost? I just think visually, and I didn't visualize it before. I didn't see that it would look like it just stops, but it does. It looks that way.
And Jane, Roger understands that. I spoke with him today and he agrees with that.
But see,
initially the request was for us to place the sidewalks on the south side. And that would have meant that we would have to cut down trees.
I know.
And we said, I think the president, Ms. Myers, agrees that that would not be in the best interest to do that.
No.
So we placed the it on the north side.
Well, can we do this? And I went out and looked at it. I've been there numerous times. I do the inspections on the houses of the building. Let's get the price on what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I agree with Jane that it would be easy to sell our houses if there was if the street was done. Get the price. Let's look at that. My mentioning that about making sure Edgefield was landscaped because I want to be able to sell the houses and I want to beautify it. So get the price. We invite the next city council and we'll see what we'll figure out where the money comes from.
Let me just say this here, folks, please. We're again. I just want to clarify this to you guys and everybody that's present here tonight. Again, we're not talking about, when I say driveways, I say driveways entrances. That's, you know, the first portion as you enter into the neighborhood's yard. We're not talking about, again, Cessna-type runways where you're going to get an F-16 ready to take off in there. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about driveways, entrances. And I know I expressed that in the first meeting, and I'm expressing that now. Driveway entrances, the curbing, and that the sidewalks are feasible. I agree with you, Ms. Jane. Let's do it all in the name of Jesus. It's God's name.
Well, your discussion today was option. You said you take the curbing over the over the sidewalk.
I said what really needs to be done right away are those driveways, along with Ms. Corrine's dilapidated porch on her residence at 1006 Edgefield Avenue. And, you know, I thank Ms. Jane for having the courage to bring to speak out for what you see need to be done. I mean, it's a, you know, a bold, courageous person to speak out when they know something that needs to be done is not being done. And I appreciate your support on that.
Ed, being the Christian that you are, you need to take a look at your brothers in your neighborhood and decide whether that's the best use of limited funds. You need to do that. You profess to be a Christian, you talk the talk. I want you to have the understanding. Now, a lot of things people say in the name of the Lord and do in the name of Jesus, but we have to be fair about this. We don't have unlimited funds. Now, I want you to understand
that if the neighborhood association got together and gave information to Lisa and Roger and other staff members that this is the best use of funds, you should talk to them. Now, I have visited your area, and I am very sympathetic to the young lady sitting here that has the crack in her porch. Now, if we want to talk about adding an estimate for anything, let's see if we can figure out how to fix that, because that might prove to be injurious to somebody when they go to visit her, because there are missing bricks. There is a crack on that porch, and I think something needs to be done about that. If the city can't do it, perhaps we could take a page out of World Changes books and go to her home and fix it. As neighbors, that's what needs to happen.
Mrs. Cochran, just add to that, Roger indicated we could get some emergency funds for that today, so that's...
Whatever, but that seems to be something we could be working on that would benefit her and benefit the health of somebody who walks through that door. But as far as the driveways are concerned, I want you to think carefully about that, because if we put concrete driveway up to where yours is, it's probably not going to match, and it's probably going to look a mess, because you already have concrete driveway on two of those property lines. I am not opposed to whatever staff feels like it can afford, but I want you to, for me tonight, to show me that you are a Christian at heart, I want you to consider the rest of that neighborhood and take a look at the best use of limited funds. And come back, and if you think that is the best use, if you think that's unselfish to put just on your street, then that's what the city manager will be encouraged to do for me. But I want you to work with your neighborhood association, and I want you to work with the other people that have worked so hard and so diligently on this project.
And I'm going to say this here to you. My Christianity is not on trial or...
You brought it up, not me.
I said, you know, Ms. Jane brought out a good point, and I said we should go ahead and do it all in the name of Jesus. God knows all our hearts. If you remember very clearly, Ms. Corbin, I asked her to come up to the podium where I stand now. She didn't want to tell you all about her dilapidated porch. God put it on my heart to speak for her, and she went ahead and joined in on the conversation. So, you know, if you're talking about being a Christian, all of us need to take a good look in the mirror and ask God, are we doing it for the glory of God, first and foremost, or are we doing it for mankind, second, for the so-called pat on the back? So we're here tonight, we're concerned with getting what we see we need to be renovated completely, and Ms. Jane, I agree with you. I think it would be a blessed win-win situation if it, the driveway entrances along the curb and the sidewalks was taken all the way to Church Street.
Well, I think Mr. Cunningham had a great suggestion, which is let's see what we're talking about.
Well,
see what it costs.
Ms. Mayor, can we hear from the president of the association, Ms. Myers, who represents this area?
Sir, as long as he wants to stay.
And while she's coming up, yes, we can go ahead and do that and talk to Larry. There's no way you could put a sidewalk out there without putting curb and gutter out there first, because the slope of those driveways in between the right-of-way line and where the fences or the property line is at, you have to build it up with a curb before you can get a sidewalk in there. But again, just so everybody understands, if there's already an asphalt driveway there and we put in curb and gutter, it'll go back as asphalt. If there's a concrete, it stays concrete. There would not be concrete in every driveway, and it's only about a 6-foot area between the road and the property line that's in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening to our city officials, to all our city officials, to our great friends, to some of the Two Hill residents. Mr. Hall, I'm so sorry that
you haven't made a meeting with us.
Thank you.
I understand
what you're saying, and I have expressed to Leslie Beasy, and I have attended some
Chiefs. Well, first of all, I'd like to say we're talking about extending the sidewalk and the curbing onto Harris Street. I have another issue with a young lady. She's concerned about coming up Morgan Street and the project stops right on top of the hill. So she has a driveway, and I went in the driveway to see exactly what she was talking about. To get out of the driveway, she's going back into the road. She has to stop oncoming traffic and the traffic that's going. Very dangerous. What she wants to find out, is there any plans to come from Hampton Avenue over to the top of that hill? You've already done the project at the top of the hill and on down Morgan. But on top of the hill from Hampton, it's a totally blind spot once you top the hill. Now, I have people on my back about what happens to the sidewalk up here, what happens to the curbing over here. They understand parallel parking is going to be here. It's going to be a dangerous situation for these people living here because with the parallel parking, they can't see what's coming from this angle. So we have a big issue everywhere.
And we're busy.
And day by day, I'm busy every day going to see what everybody wants. These residents out at 1, 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, they call Betty Myers. Betty Myers get out of her bed. She goes down the street to see what's going on. I've been out 1 or 3 days. I got to get water for all those elderly people. Give them a jug of water. Nobody's there to help me but my vice president. So we got a lot of major concerns on that street. Also, why would you stop it at the bottom of 2 here? Continue on up in front of Wyndham House on up to Richland Avenue. We got some big issues here. I'm working as hard as I can. I wish Mr. Hall would come and work with me so we can continue to try to strive for these things together. Because, you know, my neighborhood is senior citizens.
I can't be everywhere.
78 years old. I can't even, Mr. Hall, my schedule's pretty tight. My husband has cancer number 2, so I'm
working in God's community since a little child.
If you would, I'd like you to take a look on from Hampton to the top of the hill on Morgan.
I'd love to. I am so concerned that we are spending money outside of the city limits and we've got all this infrastructure that needs to be built in the city. And I just think that from the looks of what has been done, that his request is aesthetically going to be really good for the neighborhood, aside from the fact that a kid can ride a bike on both sides down to the park, which makes me feel good. And that's my whole point. I am not saying that there's not more to be done. There is absolutely more to be done.
Okay, the Morgan Street is used for emergencies, the ambulance police. That's a main street there.
I know.
There is a lot that needs done right there on that street. Mm-hmm. And we don't do something about the top of the hill. Because Cheryl called me over and told me to park in her yard. And I just stopped a line of traffic coming. Didn't know what was coming. So we need to look at that area.
Now, I think it's important to note that how long have we had a city here, Mr. Mayor? 130 years?
About 160 years.
160 years. And this city council is the first one I know of that has been able, that was willing to put the funds out to tour ahead. And we're talking about some pretty serious funds here, folks. It's like
$6 million.
So, yeah, it's got to stop somewhere. But guess what? This is a step in the right direction. And we knew when we started this, this wasn't going to be the first or the last, but it's a stepping stone. I have to agree we're going to look at it. If we can do it, I think that it would make some sense to beautify where we can then sell the properties, because in order for us to do the next phase, this first phase has got to be successful.
Exactly.
And if it's not, we're not going to be able to convince our taxpayers to keep giving us. We just spent $177,900 to buy more property. If we're not successful, that's why it's the first step. So everybody needs to just calm down, let's get the figures, and then we'll see what we can afford to do. So,
let's remember one thing. What was the first phase? Let's remember exactly what was it.
Two block area. Everybody
money we committed that money to do. And if we have money to expand, fine. But that was, let's not forget, it's so easy to say, yeah, let's start this way, and before you know it, you're out here somewhere. Betty, I wanted to ask you a question. You mentioned the lady that backs out into Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
Is it more unsafe today than it was before we did any of the work?
Yes, because...
So are you saying we've created a safety problem?
Well, it's not saying you created beautification. This is something we need.
Yeah,
well,
I'm concerned about the safety that you mentioned.
See, what happens, the construction don't start at Hampton and come down.
Right, I understand.
Right on top of the hill.
Right.
And she's afraid we understand that parallel parking is going to go on that inside of the road. So when you parallel park, it's going to make the street tighter. And the traffic is, if you stand in there, a car comes around that curve, it stands up at you. So we are concerned about the ambulance. All our emergency services, because that's their main street.
Yep.
What are we going to do when it comes? They're coming up, and people flying over the hill. There's no signal saying your road is going to change at the top of the hill. You can go on and that wide street is going to come like this. Up here, you're wide on the top.
Well, if we've got a safety problem like that, I think that we can get some signage.
Well, one of the recommendations, Mr. Mayor, has been a stop sign, possibly, right at Edgefield Avenue. That may slow the traffic down.
Okay, I'm talking about coming from Hampton.
Yeah, you're talking about at the top of the hill.
From Hampton,
I'm
talking
over the hill.
Over the hill.
Right.
When they turn in, they up in the air.
Okay.
When they get to the top of this hill, they don't realize, okay, this is no longer wide street. There's a parallel park over here now. People park in that narrow street.
Well, we need some signage up there, I think, that shows the road narrowing down.
Right, something.
Because we just don't have the funds to continue up there right now.
And now, if you could, please put one speed sign. We never have speed limit signs, Gary. And it's critical. You're always crossed at your own risk. Nothing saying anything on that street. So that's where our main emergency services use that for 6 points.
Yeah.
High-press everywhere.
Yeah. We sure need some speed limit sign or two on that street.
Also, I would like to interject right when you get to the avenue, you know, with the playground facility. Some children that play signs would be good too. I mean, you know, sometimes that's just like the Pepsi, Coca-Cola 500 do that sometimes.
Those are no longer legal signs.
That's from state. That's a state.
Because there's children that play on every block.
In their yard. But let me just say, I want to commend you for your work. I know you work hard in pulling the community together. You've done an excellent job in that area. And just want to say that we commend you for all of your time and effort and your energy in making this community into what it is right now.
And
that's
the thing I would like to say. Thank all of you for everything you've done. Julia has never been so beautiful. I am so glad that those abandoned houses are gone. And to me, I feel like these girls are free. I don't know you. Everything is gone so beautiful. I want to thank all of you for the love of my heart and my community. All my senior citizens over there, we have quite a few. And they are just so delighted. We had lighting ceremony the other night. And you should see the people out there that was tearing off with us. We were so glad to see a light. Because lights were very limited in our
community. Absolutely.
Thank you, and continue the good work no matter where you are. No matter where you work at, thank you for beautifying me.
Thank you.
If I could, just to remind Council, if you recall, 2 years ago, you asked us to develop a 10-year plan. This is year two. And we're going to get around all these other three areas. We're going to get to sidewalk from Hampton Avenue to Richland and make these other improvements. But it's a 10-year plan. And the first stage was just, as the mayor pointed out, two blocks. These other areas are going to come. We're going to get more sidewalk. We'll go ahead and beautify other areas. What we're trying to do is not jump around and catch other things. That's why I was going to bring the apartments to you, because it really wasn't part of the plan, but it was an opportunity that came along. you know, we're bringing the estimate, but again, we just need to be cautious in the fact that if we're stating this 10-year plan, we just don't start reacting to all the different areas that we'll eventually get to make the beautification and make the improvements to.
Well, I have to say that, Ms. Miles, I thank you too, but I think the citizens of Aiken, I have not heard, and I haven't heard a negative word about this from anybody. Everybody I know is delighted to see this improved, and that's the best part of it.
And once again, you know, we would just like to thank you for being a part of, you know, this occasion here. And once again, you know, the park is a main attraction in that neighborhood. And again, like we expressed in the previous meeting, the park is where we fellowship. We have had gospel programs, birthdays, cookouts, and all kind of festivities. And again, to address Ms. Myers, I have always blessedly worked in God's community from a blessed child to a blessed young adult. It's easy to start doing stuff when, you know, you want a pat on the back, but God has blessed me to talk the talk, walk the walk, and live the glory life He blessed me to live. And I happily and proudly say I am a child of God, and God bless my actions to speak for God speaks for me. And again, this is something all the citizens in our community are very concerned with. That's just something we'd like to see get done in the name of Jesus. Ms. Courtney, would you like to come up? Thank you.
Okay, one more speaker. One more. Two more? Not unless you have any peaches, anything.
Hamburgers.
I'm just concerned that I talked to you about before, where the city, when you pick up the trash, they dumped my kids up, and I was just wondering when are they going to get to it, the dirt thing. I think this lady here, she had me bring dirt once, and they just brought it. I don't know whether it was low or not, but it dumped some in the front, some in the back, but my kids, it just sitting up on the top of the ground.
The city damaged your fence? I just want to make sure I understand the situation.
Lily, you want to address that? I mean, I looked at it, and most of the area that's, there's a lot of erosion that's taking place. I saw one area that was dug out along the side. We're talking about on Perrin Street.
On the side.
But there's other portions of your fence that are just, there's erosion along there. I mean, we could go ahead and film the whole area, but it's not due to just the trash pickup.
No, and one of my hit my fence when it hit it right in the front.
That's the first I've heard that it hit your fence.
That's it, when it hit my fence up when I talked to him about it.
How long ago was that it hit your fence?
It's been almost 10 years now, I guess, what I'm doing on my time, it's about 5. It's been a good problem, and I've been having a call, left messages, I went wrong, and then I left messages, and then I called this certain man, this out to him. He's going to get back to me.
So about 10 years ago, we damaged your fence.
Yes.
Well, we can take a look at that. That's the first time I've heard about it.
It hit my fence, and the building, the dirt around it, and the cement, which you put the dirt in, I mean, put the pole in, it's up on the ground. Everywhere it is, I got dogs in that yard, and when you get one fence, I have to put boards and everything around it, and put the dogs in the bed. That's the way it is. And also, what I want to talk about, the minute that people came out, it was a lady, my man, came out once, and they looked at my porch, and then the man came by and said, I don't know who it was, but they did say they could fix it. And I was just wondering when they were going to get to it.
Do you remember who that was?
Steve, are you prepared to say anything about that? Steve is the one who looked at it.
Yeah, that's
right. I got to look at it and see what it was.
Steve, can you come up to the mic?
We can't hear you back there, Steve.
I received a message about the forest damage over
grass, and I went out and looked at it. It's a concrete deck, and it's got a block around it, and one corner of the block is cracked and started falling. I didn't see it as an emergency hazard at the time. It had concrete plus all the dirt packed underneath it, and still had the rest of the walls just pulled it all together. The next step I need to get my screen to see if there's an emergency. If you tell under emergency problem.
The only funding we have available to fix a porch like that is the emergency repair program or something, a roof leak, if you have a plumbing problem, a heating problem. So we did ask Steve to go out there and see if this was considered under the emergency program. In other words, is there a structural problem that was imminently going to cause any kind of serious problem, which is the only way that the Community Development Committee said that we should be using this funding. And are you saying that it's not an emergency?
It could turn into one, but it has the right of way for falling. We had the right of way. I had Pete Duby to look at it.
Pete Duby is one of our building inspectors.
So, at that point, we decided it's not going to collapse at that time.
That's a point of time.
And I also like to say what the whole was saying. I do agree with you with the sidewalk and the driveway. It does look bad. I'm not pushing anybody to do anything because I've been waiting for 25 years of there, then I can see it a little longer. But it does look bad. It does look like something's dropped off. I mean, if you're going to sell houses and you're going to beautify the neighborhood, it does look bad.
Ms. Colleen, we're not disagreeing with you on that, but we're not at all. And let me just ask you to work with the president, Betty, so that you know what's in line, what's already been planned to do. But Roger is a man that will show attention to this. We're not going to ignore this. As I told Mr. Hall, I was a woman of my word, a councilman of my word, when I told him at 5:30 that I called him with a response. I called him, and I've just got some personal concerns right now over not working directly with the association, because if you don't, we could have some things planned, but you don't know what's planned. If you call Ms. Myers, she will let you know what is currently going on. It could be that things are overlapping with what you planned, which is what the association is planning to do. And so I would ask you to communicate with her first, come to any time to talk with us, but at least talk with her to find out what the plans are as well.
Well, I wouldn't push anything. I would just say that,
Roger can verify that that's the first thing I said to him today when I called him.
Okay,
thank you guys.
Thank you.
Very briefly, Colleen Reed, 207 Brandon. I would like to thank before all of you, Ben Parker and Barbara Gaskin. The Aiken Farmers Market is now on the agricultural heritage corridor, and it was thanks to their work, and I want everyone to know that the farmers all appreciate it.
That'd be very good. Thank you. Let me ask Council one thing. Some time ago, we were invited, or whoever would want to go out to Woodside to take a tour. There's been so much growth out there, as we all know. And some of us I've been out there a number of times, but is anybody interested in going?
for 7 days.
It's not fine. No, but they have talked about giving us lunch and meeting some of the board members out there. You get to know some of the folks if you're interested. I thought you might be interested. I suggested it to Al Berry. Al Berry, I talked to Al about this some time ago, and I said, you know, I think it would be nice if council, some members would go out there.
How long would the tour be?
Oh, I'm sure you want probably, in, I don't know, for an hour?
Probably. I
could
do an hour.
I need to know. Would you work through the date? Let me know. Let me know when you would. It's lunch, by the way. You were over there.
He's saying lunch.
All right. What my part does, if any particular, any particular day, is one day better than another? How many want to go? Jane?
I want to go.
I could do it earlier than 3 weeks. Leslie? You're out there anyway.
I want to go.
You want to go, Roger. Roger wants to go.
I want to go next week, Mayor. It's good.
I'm taking a patrol car several times recently, but it works so well.
I don't know if we can do it next week. That's kind of short. Maybe.
Okay. Just let me know.
It's the first something of every month. What is it? The first. Okay, let me talk to Al about it. It looks like most everybody wants to go. Pat doesn't want to go. Okay, well, I think most everybody wants to go. Let me see if I can get a few dates, and then we'll pass them back to you. Probably at the next meeting. Yes, we are. See you. Pat.